kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
That is a loaded question. It's been a rough week.
Anything you want to talk about?
I went to a doctor and they tried to kill me.
How did they try to kill you?
So, basically, they were, like, testing my mobility and shit. And some of the methods that he used for questionable, to say the least. I've complained before that, you know, my hands and my feet go numb.
Yeah.
And so the way that he was, air quote, testing the numbness in my feet and my hands was he had a Q-tip, and I just felt a cat nudge my foot. he had a Q-tip and a toothpick. And he was striking them across my legs and my feet like matches. Over and over and over. And asked me. A toothpick. That hurts, and I had welts when I left that office.
That's fucked up.
There were welts up and down my shins and my calves and on my feet from where he had repeatedly struck me with a toothpick. I don't know how having a nerve conduction test done at the hospital is not sufficient information for whether or not I have numbness compared to repeatedly striking me with a toothpick. I don't think that was the best method for testing that. Another thing that they were doing, basically, like, I'm trying to get approved for disability, and this doctor's job was to try to prove I'm lying about being disabled. No. I'm not. The cane is not a fashion statement. I have rheumatoid disease. I have fibromyalgia. I have scarring on my liver. I have quite a few health problems. And
sound fit as a fiddle to me.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine to go working at Walmart. they're totally going to put up with my ass. One of the things that they wanted me to do was, like, he's like, I'm going to test your grip. And the thing is, like, he was very blunt, very callous. He never looked me in the eye. He never asked me about my condition. He just had this checklist of shit he was doing, and not much of it made sense in the context of what I was there for. But at one point, like, he puts his fingers in front of me. He's like, squeeze my fingers. And I'm like, well, okay, I can't make a fist, but sure. So I squeeze, while I'm squeezing his fingers, he jerks his arms down and pulls them out of my grasp as hard as he can. And, like, it caught me so off guard that I actually sprained one of my fingers from it.
Oh my God.
And so I've had, in my index finger on my right hand, I've had, like, a really sharp pain just going up and down my finger ever since he did it. And I think the worst aspect of it is that he did these tests, and yeah, sure, I can stand up in the middle of a room. I can put my arm up in the air. You know, I can lay down on a bed and get back up eventually. It was a little bit of help. But these kind of tests, they don't show the after effects of that kind of overexertion that I get from having rheumatoid disease.
Yeah.
Like, I can kid, what the hell is this, a real doctor? It's very questionable. Very questionable.
Yeah, I had doubts it was not a quack when you were talking to me about it.
There were cameras in the parking lot so that they could watch me get in and out of the car. And that's how they try to catch people, is they have cameras in the parking lot. I didn't even see them. My mother-in-law, when I come back out and got back in, she was like, there's cameras in the parking lot. Another thing, I went in And like, as soon as I filled out the paperwork for the nurses and gave them the paperwork, and then when they called me back, they were like, oh, you have a cane. And they were like making side eyes at each other over the cane. And then the entire time they were doing the triage stuff, they kept taking my cane and moving it to the other side of the room. Oh, so they were basically trying to like get me to go get it without it. And I'm sitting there going, why do you guys keep taking my fucking cane? I can't walk without it. And then at one point with the doctor, he's like, stand up in the middle of the room and put your arms out in front of you. And I looked at him and I was like, I'm not putting my cane down. And he goes, why are you afraid you'll fall? And I'm like, well, that's the whole fucking point of the thing, isn't it? I've fallen. And so I need a cane.
And it was Jesus.
Such an unusual. And he's like, well, fine, then just put one arm up. And then at one point he's like, reach up and try to touch the ceiling. And I'm like, dude, I can't touch the ceiling. And he's like, well, why do you think you can't touch the ceiling? And I said, I don't know, maybe because I'm short. It got to a point where I started to get really unruly and pissy with him because it was just, ask stupid questions, get stupid answers kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, he genuinely started to piss me off to a point where I just started to kind of turn into a bitch about it. And I tried initially to be very respectful, but after a point, I was just like, no, look, fuck you. Yeah, there was one moment he goes, oh, he goes, so have you ever had blood work done to say that you have? And I'm sitting here thinking, didn't they fucking send you my chart? Like, you know, all 700 pages of it, because I have copies of my charts. They're thick.
Jeez.
And I'm like, didn't they ever send you my chart? And he's like, do you actually have blood work done? I was like, no, they're totally in the business of giving out chemo just for shits and giggles now.
I get chemo on the corner all the time.
Yeah. I'm like, methotrexate, man. You just go hit up a horse farm or something. That's what you do in State of Decay, the first State of Decay. Like, well, the very first mission is that the chick has lupus and you have to go get her methotrexate from a veterinary clinic.
Huh.
Yeah. And I think that's probably why I got, like, hooked on the series, because it was right around the same time I got diagnosed. Jeez. And started taking it, and I was just like,
I have something I can connect with.
Yeah. You know, chemo that they give horses sometimes. Medicine's weird. Please stop chewing on my fingers.
Sorry.
Excuse me, sir. I'm just sitting here like talking with my hands. All of a sudden I feel a tiny little paw wrap around it and bite.
That's okay. No. Pickle is still in my lap, just purring up a storm. So
I would like for him to purr and not try to maul my hand. That would be good.
You were right, though. How are you was a loaded question.
Yeah, it's been a really rough week. And you know, that's one of the reasons we recorded on Friday this week instead of Thursday, is because I just needed rest. Honestly, I still need rest, but at this point, I'm hoping that the steroids kick in and I can carry through this. But Aki said, you know, she would have cried and left. There was a point where I cried. That was one of the other things. He made me take off my shoes. And, of course, so he could beat me with a toothpick. Who the fuck knew? But he was like, you need to take your shoes off. And I'm going, well, and I straight up said, well, if I'd known that, I would have just worn my slippers. Because I can't tie my own shoes anymore. David does it for me. And so then I had to, like, sit and fight a good 10 minutes to get my shoes untied. I get them untied. I get them off. And then before I leave, he's like, put your shoes back on. I'm like, yeah, I just told you I couldn't take them off. What makes you think I can put them back on? So then I sat in front of him and I just like pushed my foot into him and I didn't tie them or couldn't put them up over my heel. That was the point where I cried, because I felt demeaned. And that he was like, we're going to put you in this other room so I can start working with somebody else while the nurse comes and gets you. And when the nurse come in to get me, I had been sitting there crying. And, yeah, I cried I cried the whole time after I got home because I've been in pain. I'm in a flare. I've got a fever. My joints are swelled up. I took 3 Norco yesterday and they didn't even touch the pain. And so I was just like, I've done all this, and if they deny me, it's for nothing.
Yeah.
And that's the worst of it. Like, I put myself through this hell that'll take me a week to even out from, and they very well might still say no. And then it's just, what do you do from there? Like, do you just believe that maybe all the pain and all the bullshit's in your head?
Man, this is a heavy episode.
Yep, sorry. Is this the first?
Speaking of dicks.
Aki said, is this the first time? This is actually the 4th time I've applied, and I've been told no every time. But this is only the 2nd time they've sent me to a doctor. And I know you could go through the whole hearing process before, but again, I struggle with the mental element of it, of, you know, am I overreacting? Should I be more mobile than I am? There are women who have this disease who are in their 50s and keep on working and just take ibuprofen. And here I'm on chemo and I'm on biologics and pain medication, and I need to see a specialist for my spine, and I barely get out of bed. So the fuck's wrong with me, you know? Is it in my head or am I really?
It's very clearly not in your head.
I'd like to think.
I think you pointed out that it is in your spine, but it's not in your head.
Yeah. That was the other thing at one point. He was like, why do you keep, he had me laying on my back, and I kept, like, whenever he'd walk away, I'd roll over on my hip because my back was hurting so bad. And he's like, you gotta stay laying on your back. Why do you keep moving? I'm like, dude, my back is broken. I literally have fractures in my spine.
Jesus.
But by all means, chastise me for not laying on my back. it's a thing. But yeah, if I get rejected this time, I'm going to break down and go through the hearing route because it's, something's got to give.
Yeah.
If the Republican governor of Kentucky has his way about it, I'm going to lose my insurance. And seeing as my medication costs $5,000 a month just for one, I can't do that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, so, man.
I have to find some way to keep my medication. Or I really will be fucked. Like, you think I will bitch and whine about hurting now? Woo!
Imagine you without the pain pills.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, anyway, geez. So speaking of dicks, which that guy clearly was.
Yeah. He was very clearly an asshole.
New game fixed his pain. I feel like there should be a game about all the ways you have to find your way around the world with a disease that cripples your hands and your feet. Like, you need to always make sure that there's somebody in the game with you to open a jar. You should have a food meter, but you can't open the jar, so you can't make any food. You can't open cans. You gotta have a co-op partner to open the shit for you.
This does not sound like a fun game.
It's not a fun life either.
Oh, my Lord. I don't know how to transition to news.
I don't know at this point, so I guess just let's go.
I think the big story this week, Wired ran an article, the PlayStation 5 was officially announced for holiday 2020. So it is
already official?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is now official. It is officially called the PlayStation 5.
Oh.
Because they weren't certain on the name before. God okay. Knows what the hell they would have called it. I think they have a trend going.
Yeah.
They confirmed it will use 100 gig optical discs and will be a 4K Blu-ray player. So they're finally getting on board there.
Okay.
And that the controller.
I know I saw that and people were like, ah, and I'm like, the Xbox One S has that. Why are you losing your shit now?
I know, for real. You could get a 4K Blu-ray player for like $150 now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Xbox. But, they said the controller, they're doing some fun stuff with the controller. It will feature adaptive triggers, which will adjust the tension depending on what you're doing with the triggers. Like they made comparisons to like drawing a bow with a bow and arrow. Mm-hmm. So the harder that you pull back, or the more you pull back, the harder it's going to be.
That's cool on one hand and problematic on another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sure they'll have like limitations, or I don't know. It's all new.
Games would have to have an accessibility option to remove that.
Yeah.
Because if you struggle with your grip, hello, then you're not going to be able to play games that make use of that.
Well, let's be fair. Are you going to buy a PlayStation 5?
No. But you know,
there you go.
There are people who have disabilities on all platforms.
True.
When we all play, we all win.
They said the controller, instead of rumble motors, will feature haptic feedback as well.
The hell's that?
It's like, you know how your phone vibrates when you touch it?
Oh.
Basically, it's a better form of vibration.
Huh, okay.
It allows for more customizable sensations and feels and vibrations, and it's like the triggers, I believe the triggers in the Xbox One controller are haptic triggers.
Yeah.
Because there's no motors in there to rumble them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you now. I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, the PS5 is official. It is officially coming, and hooray.
Okay.
Still no price, still no pictures of what it looks like.
$759.
Hey, you never know. Sony might keep their head in their asshole for this one. You never know. Red Dead Redemption 2 is hitting the PC on November 5th, surprising absolutely nobody.
No. I will say the bigger surprise was that it took it this long to hit PC.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what the reason behind it was. Or if we ever even got one.
Took this long for Grand Theft Auto to force people to double dip?
No. Wait, did they do that with Grand Theft Auto too?
Yeah.
It's unusual to see a game go console first, then PC. That's especially from a big studio.
Well, they are known as a console developer.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh. I guess I don't look at any developer unless they're first party as console developers. They're just developers, third-party developers. Develop for all the parties, unless you're Activision, and then you give shit Sony and not Xbox. That's a rant for another day.
I think we had that one on the show already.
We'll be having it again.
Probably. PlayStation 7.00 update hit this week, bringing with it some party improvements, including improved audio quality, and the party size has increased from 8 to 16 people. It also brings remote play for Android 5.0 higher devices, or 5.0 and higher devices.
Okay.
So that is the info on the 7.0 update on PlayStation.
Okay.
Good stuff. Xbox's October update also hit, bringing with it wishlist notifications when items go on sale, app and game limits for family settings, and more flexible capture settings, and more. So it just updates everywhere, and there's not
much
in
them. You get an update. You get an update. Everybody gets an update of something, even though it's nothing groundbreaking.
Yeah, can you tell it was a busy news week?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a thing.
Some actual news. Doom Eternal has been delayed until March 20th, 2020.
A delayed game is eventually good. A rushed game is permanently bad.
Yeah.
Or sometimes eventually good, but rarely. Yeah. And then it's too late. You done pissed everybody off and nobody wants to play it.
Yeah, it got delayed to March. Same day as Animal Crossing.
Uh-oh. RIP Animal Crossing.
Yeah. Although the Switch version of Doom will come even later. No word on when, but along with it, it was announced Doom 64 will be a pre-order bonus for Doom Eternal and would release the same day on all consoles.
Am I nuts? I thought it was already going to be, like, why did I think it was already a pre-order bonus?
I don't know. Doom 64 was only announced for the Switch.
Oh,
but now only they confirmed. Now they confirmed it's going to be on all platforms March 20th, 2020.
I kind of just assumed it was already going to be on everything and that it was a pre-order bonus. There's my psychic connection kicking in.
I guess so.
My ancestors whispered it to me from another dimension.
I'm sure you are excited about this, but Stranger Things is doing a Haunted Hollows event in partnership with Rocket League. The event will run from October 14th through November 11th, and the event features unique Stranger Things-styled rewards and the Upside Down Arena for a limited time.
I am so excited. the like the Dark Country Weekend. Farm
you
Arena?
You just heard Cole come a little.
It'd be the Country Farm Arena is my favorite anyway, just from the aesthetic aspect. And then they're taking that and making it look like the Upside Down. Fuck yeah. Just a little glimpse we got to see in the trailer looks so good. I'm so excited. And I keep telling everybody, I'm like, I don't care if you don't watch Stranger Things, because I think I'm the only person in my circle that does. Weirdos.
Really?
Yeah. And so, like, and I'm like, I don't care. You have to be excited about this for me. I'm excited, therefore you've got to pretend to be excited.
Yeah, it looks cool, though.
Looks fantastic.
I can only assume you're going to be playing Rocket League a whole lot more.
I think I can put aside Tropico and Frostpunk to get some Rocket League time in.
Oh, geez. Some games were announced as coming to PC Game Pass later on this month. No dates were announced, but there's a nice lineup. So, F1 2018, Lonely Mountains Downhill, Minute, obviously The Outer Worlds, when it launches, will be on PC Game Pass. Mm-hmm. Saints Row 4 Re-Elected coming to PC Game Pass, State of Mind, and Stellaris.
I'm kind of glad to see Stellaris come to PC Game Pass. I played it on Xbox, and I really enjoyed it, but it was not well made for the controller. It definitely needs mouse and keyboard. So I want to try it again, but get to actually play it like it should be played.
Yeah.
So that it's a little... It has very overwhelming menus, and even with a mouse and keyboard, I can see getting lost with it. But, yeah, it's... I want to try it out again.
Yeah, and then Dark Meek is asking if Outer Worlds is going to be on Xbox or PC-only Game Pass. It's supposed to be on both, so I don't know why they only specified it as PC. I guess because it was a PC update, but it's supposed to be on both.
Yeah.
I think you could actually pre-download the placeholder file, like the 100 meg placeholder file now, and then it'll update when the full game launches. Or when the full game's ready to download?
I don't know. Let me go see.
So you can pre-install.
Yeah. Preloading. Yay. Man, preloading Game Pass games.
That is helpful. That is surprisingly... Yeah. I never thought that they would do that you could preload Game Pass stuff, but I'm glad you can.
Yeah. Yeah, they let you do it with Gears 5.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can preload it. Install on my devices right now. You can play The Outer Worlds with Game Pass for console. Or PC, obviously.
There you go. Too. See, there we go.
Yeah.
And then surprisingly, a game is leaving PC Game Pass. It's still in beta, but a game is already leaving.
Mm.
What's Sinner, leaving? Sinner Sacrifice for Redemption.
Okay.
That's not a huge one.
I didn't play that one, no.
And it's only one, though. And then
but
last,
it's expected.
Yeah. Things are going to come and go. It's going to happen. But last bit of news I have is that Microsoft Corporate Vice President Mike Ybarra is leaving Xbox after 20 years.
Man, that was not news that I expected.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising.
But I have theories on where he's going.
Where?
Blizzard.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
because he's a big time Blizzard junkie, and I think that's the only thing he would have left Xbox for. Yeah, he's a big Blizzard fan, so we'll see.
Yeah, Blizzard isn't.
He will still be streaming on. Yeah, Blizzard's there, in some hot water. There's been
a shit storm with Blizzard this week too. Have you kept up on this?
Only in passing. Like, I haven't actively searched for it. I have general idea.
I feel bad. This is such a huge story, and there's not much that I have to say about it.
Yeah.
But one of the streamers, was it with Hearthstone or Overwatch?
I think Overwatch. Maybe both.
Maybe both, but they held up signs protesting China and the whole political turmoil going on over there, and Blizzard suspended them and removed their winnings, and things just got ugly. Accounts are getting banned. Players are trying to delete accounts. It's just a shitstorm with Blizzard right now, and it does not look good for
him. Okay, yeah, it was Hearthstone. He was banned from a Hearthstone tournament. He forfeited, didn't forfeit, they took his winnings. Basically, on one hand, it's kind of par the course for corporations to toe the China line.
Yeah.
That's not a market they want to lose. There are over 1 billion people in China's marketplace, and it's shitty. But from a capitalism standpoint, it makes perfect sense. But it's also problematic for Americans who have freedom of speech, who very much value that freedom of speech, to suffer from censorship because of another country's rulings.
Yeah.
That's kind of counterproductive to what we're supposed to be here in America. So, I don't know. I think that Blizzard has hardcore fucked up how they've handled it.
Oh, big time.
I don't know that there is a good way to handle it, though. I don't know that there is any good way, like, that it could, there is no win-win, you know?
No, this is a lose on all situations kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know.
Nika, I'm Asian, shitty. So it's not racist. Fuck China.
No. I mean, China pulls some shit, and the last little bit, they have pulled some spectacularly awful shit, even more than usual. So, I don't know.
I don't know, but that's the news I had. Anything you want to talk about?
Well, nope.
Now you ready to just dive into reviews?
Yep. Yeah. Let's do it. I'm too brain fried to try to be deep and thoughtful right now. Otherwise, I'd give a far better, like, if I weren't scatterbrained and, like, just fried to the gills, I'd have, I'm sure, some kind of big long rant about the whole Blizzard and China thing, because everybody knows I love an opportunity to get political. Yeah. But I'm not in the mind frame to properly approach it, and I don't want to say something shitty or ill-informed, because I fight the redneck stereotype every time I hop on that wagon, so.
You fight that stereotype every time you open your mouth.
Every fucking time. Have I ever told you the time I went on a podcast and one of the other co-podcasters, like, made a lot of really horrible statements about what kind of person she thought I was just based off my accent? And then really? I never had a chance to, like, defend myself from it, and she blocked me on social media and everything. Like, she had followed me prior to going on the podcast, and then, like, she heard my voice and heard I was from Kentucky, and she immediately assumed that, like, I was a racist and Trump supporter. Wow. And I'm sitting here going, I'm the most bleeding heart liberal commie bitch you'll ever meet. Wow. She was so far gone. And I feel bad. I didn't get an opportunity to be like, no, that's not how, just because I talk funny doesn't mean I'm dumb.
Yeah, I talk normally and I'm pretty dumb. So.
I'm surprisingly educated for a redneck. Excuse you.
Yes. Terrible. I'm coughing on the side over here.
Austin said, I'm the sweetest bluegrass lady. You either must not know a lot of ladies from the bluegrass. Or you have a very low bar for what constitutes sweet.
Yeah.
I'm full of piss and vinegar, but like if you took a bottle and you made that bottle out of gunpowder and lead and then you filled it up with piss and vinegar, that'd be me. Put a wick down in it, light the match, and just watch what happens.
And just run.
Run.
Get the fuck out of there.
Goodness.
All right. Reviews. Ready to start reviews.
Yes.
We're not going to go to bed anywhere now. No, you got a lot to talk about.
Oh, fuck.
But first game to talk about tonight is called Grid, developed and published by Codemasters, released October 11th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $59.99. Grid is a racing experience like no other, offering unrivaled wheel-to-wheel racing for everyone, where every race is unpredictable as you create rivals and nemeses on your road to conquering the world of motorsport. Drive now and get your heart racing. Grid is the latest Codemasters racing game. And it is really, really fun.
Wait, hold up. Back up.
Okay.
Codemasters made a racing game? What? Yes,
Codemasters makes racing games, believe it or not.
I'm so flabbergasted.
Yeah, this is a reboot of the Grid series that we saw two entries on last gen consoles. Mm-hmm. Grid 2, and was there Grid Motorsport as well?
I think there might have been three, yeah. I'm not Googling it, but yeah.
Anyway, it's the return of the series, and this focuses on more track-based street races as opposed to, like, you know, an open-world style racing game. This is not going to be Forza Horizon. This is not going to be Burnout Paradise. This is like the old-school Burnout games where everything is track-based, or like the Forza Motorsport games where everything is just course-based and just on, I don't know, on, I can't word. What am I trying to say?
I don't know, because I went to Google. It was Grid Autosport.
Grid Autosport.
I said I wasn't going to Google it, and then I did it.
You did it anyway.
Couldn't help myself.
Everything is course-based, yeah. So everything is on course. There are six different categories that the races are in. They have Touring, Stock, Tuner, GT, Fernando Alonso, and Invitational. Each of those has 12 or 13 different events that you could take part in. And then a final event that is the, I guess, winning the whole category. And once you complete four different categories, you can unlock the Grid World Series, which I have not done yet because it takes a lot of work to unlock all of everything. Like, there's like 100 events in this game. There's a lot that you can do in this game.
Damn.
Yeah, career mode is not dicking around. As you go through the races, each of them usually has about 3 laps to them. You finish the race, you earn credits, you earn experience, your racing level goes up. The big thing that you can unlock with your level is different backgrounds and banners for your profile picture, so that when you enter races online, you could show off what different banners you have unlocked or what kind of cool background you got. They also let you customize your profile picture with different icons of events you've completed or different, like I got a gold one for completing the touring series, a gold hammerhead looking icon. So I have that as my main one.
Nice.
So I look special and pretty.
Yay.
They do have online as well. I tried getting a couple races. I don't know if it's because I played pre-release. Technically, the game released Tuesday for like the deluxe edition buyers, and then it released on Friday for everyone else. I wasn't able to get any games going, but it's probably because I was doing it in the early morning.
Mm-hmm.
So I called it.
Look, there's a very specific window of time where it doesn't matter how many players are in a game, you ain't finding nobody.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I was trying to do that, but even before the episode started recording, I tried doing a search and I wasn't finding any games, so I couldn't unfortunately test the online play. I didn't know anyone else who had the game, so I could try getting a one-on-one match either. But if their previous games are any indication, I don't expect there to be any problems with the online mode. Obviously, if there are any issues, we'll update you and let you know what's going on. Awesome Prime saying he's getting the game now.
Now you have somebody to play with.
I do have someone to play it with now, and I probably will play it because I'm having a lot of fun with this game. I had a lot of problems with the latest Forza game. I mean, the Forza Motorsport 7 looked incredible, but the way everything was, where they had microtransactions and they had like power-up cards you had to use, and they just overcomplicated everything, and Grid just seemingly simplifies everything to just racing. There's no fucking around. There's no sim management behind the scenes stuff with a career mode where you have to take care of hiring people and firing and setting up your garage and everything. This game is just fucking racing. Focus on the racing. The handling is fantastic, although some of the cars in the later series, they a bit too touchy on the turns, but overall the handling is fantastic in the game. It was really easy to get into and start driving and feeling like a badass and earning accolades and experience and everything else. If I had any gripes with the game, it would be I wish there were more courses. It felt like I was on the same courses all the time while doing new events, either forwards or backwards, or like have half a course. It just felt like the same places over and over. And then the other gripe I have, if you could call it a gripe, is when you earn experience in the races, you earn experience by like getting close to other racers or passing them, or, you know, getting close to the wall. You'll earn proximity bonuses, drifting, pretty much everything that you would earn experience for in a racing game, you can earn experience for in this game. Sometimes you'll do something that causes the chain to reset, and it'll, most of the time it's like running into other cars or slamming into the wall. But there were a lot of times where I would lose my chain and I didn't know why. I don't know if it's because I ran off course in a certain way, or if I, like, there were times I would slam into a wall while drifting and it would keep my chain going. And then there's other times where I would like just barely nudge the bumper of another car and it resets it.
So it felt very inconsistent. Like, most racing games are bad for that.
Yeah, it just felt very inconsistent on what classified as a valid chain and what would reset it.
Yeah.
But aside from that, the game is fantastic. It looks great. It plays great. There's a lot to do in the game. If you buy the deluxe edition with the season pass, they're going to have more events coming through season based, where I think they're going to rotate in and out. I don't know what they're doing with that, but It looks interesting. More events is always good.
Yes.
$60 on this one. I got to give it a buy. I'm loving this game. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I know it's getting mixed reviews from other critics, but I'm having fun with this game. It is what I want in a racing game. It is focused on the racing. It is focused on fun, and I love it. So buy it.
Nice. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Me too.
I'm a little tickled because Cass, first he was gnawing at me when we first started this, and then like he just kind of plopped over and fell asleep. And I'm sitting here looking at this little fat fluff ball, and like his little feet are just running 90 miles a minute in his sleep, and he's just like, meh, going nowhere.
Oh, God.
And I'm sitting here, you're dinner, you know, I'm trying to hold back the giggles.
You should have giggled.
He's just going nowhere.
See, and this is why you need a camera, so we can see your cats.
Kitty cam.
But next game to talk about is called The Bradwell Conspiracy, developed by A Brave Plan, published by Abossa Studios, released October 8th on PC and PS4, 10th on the Switch, 11th on Xbox One for $19.99. Following a sudden explosion at the Stonehenge Museum fundraiser, you find yourself trapped in a hidden underground complex. Your only means of escape is by sending photographs of your surroundings to another survivor confined elsewhere. Cole, what is this game?
So, this is one of those games where it's going to sound really weird as I talk about it. I promise that when you're in it, it makes sense. But describing it's going to sound a little off. You play as a silent, nameless protagonist. Apparently, you were attending an event at a museum dedicated to the philanthropy of a manufacturing company called Bradwell Electronics. The museum is attacked in what is supposedly, heavy on the air quotes, supposedly a terror attack. The building's been destroyed, and the whole point of you being the silent protagonist is because your vocal cords are somehow damaged during the attack. That's the excuse they give. You are guided through the museum by a disembodied guide type voice. Kind of think of GLaDOS from Portal.
Okay.
For the guiding voice. And then
silent Cole, that's not a thing.
I saw that. It's also true. So the guide voice is very, very similar to GLaDOS in a way. But that's not the only voice that you're going to interact with. You will eventually come in contact with another disembodied voice of a lady named Amber. Amber has also been trapped in the building, but she at least knows the ins and outs of the place a little bit, and she can help try to navigate you out so that you can evacuate. In doing so, however, you can't talk back to her, so you have to take photos using your fancy Google Lens type glasses that you have and send them to her. And she will help you look at your surroundings and give you hints and walk you through. This also leads to some really funny moments because you can totally troll her. Like, I was walking around snapping pictures of just completely random things. And then she would always have to have like some kind of comeback of like, I don't know why you're sending me that. I sent her, the museum is literally outside of Stonehenge. Like the Stonehenge monument, you can look out the window in the beginning and see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sent her that, and then she was like, yep, our building crumbles, but that's the rocks stand there forever, you know? And she's just like making snarky comments about everything. She reminded me very much of Delilah from Firewatch, the way that she just kind of interacts to your surroundings with this wit and humor. I really enjoyed the character. The voice acting for the guide just makes you want to choke him because it is very stoic and robotic. But Amber is a nice breakup in that when you have to spend a couple hours exploring this building and at least you have a little bit of comedic relief. Even though your character never says anything, you can kind of trigger her into saying some humorous things.
Nice.
I really had a good time just finding random things to send photos of just to see what she would say about it. there's an achievement for flushing all the toilets in the building.
Oh God.
And so then like, you know, that leads to some amusement as well.
I love when also, games have fun with their achievements like that.
Yeah. Although I will say, If you intend to go for the achievements in this game, good luck. Because there's one for reading every book. And I just want to point out how well these things can be hidden. This is a building that has been bombed. I walked through like 17 rooms solving puzzles. And then I was like, books? The fuck are the books at? And then I go and I look and somebody already has an achievement guide. People are insane, by the way. There was already an achievement guide on the Steam community. It was like, here's where all the books are. And clearly I've already missed like 50.
Jeez.
I was like, motherfuck. Well, I guess I'm playing it again. Good thing I thought it was funny. Initially, I was a little disappointed. The game, when it first starts, does feel very much like a walking simulator or walk exploration, however you want to say it. Usually in that kind of game, or in these narrative-driven puzzle-type games, you can kind of interact with everything. But the Bravo Conspiracy kind of suffers in that you can interact with nothing that doesn't benefit you. The most you might be able to do is like occasionally look at a pamphlet or the books or something like that.
Yeah.
But like if you go into a room and there's a shelf with stuff all over it, you can't touch any of that. And most games in this genre will like let you interact and you can just throw shit around. You know, it's at least kind of amusing to poke around and see what you can find. Whereas the Bravwell Conspiracy is very much, this is what it looks like. It's a museum. Look, don't touch. Keep moving. As far as the puzzle elements go, we have another portal element coming. Like, there's clearly some inspiration that has gone on here. Because this is a sci-fi type of narrative puzzler, you have access to weird little gadgets. I already mentioned like the Google Glasses type thing that, you know, lets you navigate with the guide and take pictures to send to Amber. But you also eventually pick up an SMP. I forget what that's actually short for. But the purpose of it is that this company has developed a material that can be broken down and reassembled at will, so long as you have a blueprint and this gun. So you use this gun to take blueprints of items in the world, say a puzzle piece or a statue. There's one personality test that requires you to take blueprints of a cat and a dog. And you have to, like, it determines your personality based on whether you put all cats and one dog or all dogs and one cat. I went for the all cat route.
Nice.
I got an achievement. There's also one for all dogs, so I had to do it again anyway. But the way that the material works is as long as you've got that blueprint, you can point that gun and it will create whatever item as long as you've got enough units of material and the blueprint. So like the very first time it has you use it, for example, you take a blueprint and break down a key that is behind a lock, and then you use the key to open the lock after you reprint it. So then you move on, like I said, then you do the cat and dog statues. The next one will be, it has a puzzle on the wall that you have to recreate that puzzle, but you only have blueprints for one puzzle piece. So you have to learn how to rotate the puzzle pieces and things like that. And then you'll use that gun to basically create items that you need to get you through most of the puzzles. And then as you do all that, you come to find out that not everything at the museum was as it seems, and you uncover a conspiracy, and it gets very sci-fi and weird, and it's fantastic, but it's also very hard to talk about and make sense out of.
It sounds really cool.
Yeah, I had a fantastic time with it. I really did. But the attention to detail was really good too. The design and I'm struggling with my words. You can tell I'm tired. The design of the building and the museum and just all the thought put into the company and how well fleshed out everything was absolutely incredible. But it wasn't flawless, because you did have the issue with the gun where it's kind of finicky. And there are parts where you need to put items in specific places, but you only have a small area to work with. And the gun can, like, even if you're not super close to where you're trying to create the blueprint at, it'll still be like, oh, you're too close. And it's like, what do you want me to do? Fall in the hole? If I do, then you're going to be mad at me. I can't do everything. There has to be more space. I was not in a mindset to deal with this kind of abuse.
Oh, God.
But it was really, really cool. And other than being finicky with the gun, I thought it was really well done.
Well, then $20 on it, what do you say?
I gave it a definite buy it. It's very creative, but you can still see where the inspiration is from. I was reading what Ian said.
Just in time to hear Cole not being prepared for the hole.
Yeah. Can't help myself.
Oh, well. Next game to talk about is called Frostpunk, developed and published by 11-Bit Studios. It released October 11th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. In a completely frozen world, people develop steam-powered technology to oppose the overwhelming cold. Society in its current form becomes ineffective and it has to change in order to survive. What does this mean? What is culture when morality stands in the way of existence? Cole, tell us about Frostpunk.
Holy fuck, I did not need another game to get addicted to. Frostpunk is a dystopia simulator, as they aren't want to be, where the world has gone to shit because it's just absolutely covered in ice. In preparation for this giant ice storm, there were generators that were set up so that survivors could come to them and rebuild their cities and stay warm and survive the weather. I want to point out, when I say that the world has gone to ice and snow, that I do not mean that it is like 28 degrees Fahrenheit and you could go out in a puffer jacket and some boots. No. We are talking about temperatures in the negative 90s.
Jesus.
Fahrenheit. Spoiler alert, I guess, because the first time it got that cold. Like, the funny thing about this game is that you want to approach it like a standard simulator, but the changing weather elements will fuck you up every time. And when you start and you see the temperature and it's like, it's -4 degrees. I'm from Kentucky. We get to -4. I'm fine with that. Y'all quit your bitching. Go get some firewood. You're fine. Or in this case, you use coal to fire up the generator. But, you know, like the first time I saw that, I was like, what's the big deal? When are you using Celsius? Like the world, the game lets you choose Celsius or Fahrenheit, but I use freedom degrees. Fuck you.
Sponge. I'm sorry. I think Fahrenheit makes more sense than Celsius.
Yeah. I don't understand Celsius to save myself.
Zero's cold. 100 is hot. There, that makes sense.
So, you know, like I said, -4 the first time I was like, it's cold, but it's fine. I've survived -4. And then suddenly the weather changes and it's -20. And then you're like, oh shit, my people are getting frostbite, but if they don't go out there and get the cold, then we're all fucked. And then from there, it goes down to -40. And then from -40, it just like shits the bed. And that's when you go to -90 and you're like, yeah, I've made mistakes. You can play the game with different scenarios, or you can play the story mode. Story mode has you taking on the role of being a captain in the in the new community, you will pass laws. People sometimes will get very pissed at the law that you pass. And you're forced with making really difficult decisions on how you're going to rebuild your society. You need to send out scouts and look for other communities and other survivors. You've had to leave survivors behind who couldn't finish making the trip to the generator with you. And you have to go back looking for them and hope that they've survived. You need resources, and some of them cannot be found around the generator no matter what you do. You have to send people out looking for them. You got to come up with ways to provide food, and given that everything is overwhelmingly smothered in ice, you're not going to be able to just have a normal garden. It's not like surviving Mars, where you just put up an oxygen dome and plant a regular garden and call it a day. You have to develop a hothouse. You have to research that hothouse and how it's going to work within the cold. You have to decide where around your generator you're going to put these things, because some things can be okay if you put them further away from the heat. Houses, for example, are not. And you need to keep people warm. So it's more important to keep the houses closer to the middle of the generator. And everything is built in this circular ring. So you have to really plan how close and how far apart things are. You don't necessarily want your prison in the middle of the ring, close to your child shelters, but you don't want it so far away that those people are going to freeze either, because they're not going to stay there forever unless you enact the law that makes them stay there forever, which would be mean. The choices that you are forced with can be incredibly daunting, and sometimes you have to just like accept that you've made a choice that you would really not want to have to make in real life. For example, you can decide whether to let people bury the dead or whether you build a snow pit and freeze the bodies and use them for organ donation to keep people alive later on down the road.
Huh.
Or you have to decide if you're going to allow child labor. But then kids have a greater chance of getting sick, and then the children die, and then you don't have any more population when your population ages.
I mean, not all the kids are going to work, but just most of them.
Yeah, but if you enact child labor, they all work. So when they all work, oh, fuck, you know? You've got to then worry about, there's the potential for frostbite. Are you going to amputate and then build a factory and make prosthetics? Or are you just going to say, well, sucks to be you. Hope I find more survivors along the way and replenish my group some other way. You have to accept the consequences of everything you do. And there will be consequences. Eventually, your people might get pissed off and decide, fuck you, you're doing such a bad job that we're casting you out. Or they might say, fuck you, you're doing such a bad job, we're all going to go back to London and try our luck there instead, because we might survive better there than under your watch here. And then they'll have to deal with riots and protests while they try to convince everybody else to go back to London.
Damn.
So then you have to go, okay, are we going to be you know, spiritual about this? Are we going to be a faith-based community and try to rely on hope? Or are we going to fall on order and the rule of law? And are we going to, focus more on having guards or churches, you know? And how is that going to affect your group's discontent and your group's hope? Well, to be fair,
sounds like Cole is addicted to this game because she enjoys forced child labor and amputating people.
To be fair, I never I never signed the law on child labor. I did allow them to be apprentices in medical hospitals, and I fucking did forcibly amputate people multiple times.
Oh, God.
Which is how I found out that you can get kicked out. It was a hard lesson to learn. But sometimes you just have to come to terms with, I fucked up the community, and it's going to end and start all over again. And you do better and you get further with the more that you learn. And you start to learn how the different buildings work together and how fast you need to learn to like collect the materials. If you don't have a certain set of materials by this day, you're fucked. You better hope you get that sawmill built.
No point in signing off on child labor when they're already dying willy-nilly from coal bomb care.
I have, I really do, and I did this with Tropico too, but I do tend to be like very liberal, like I focus very heavily on letting the group maintain liberation while also trying to give them what they need. Sometimes these games just don't let that shit happen. And I mean, when you're in a position in a game like Frostpunk where literally nothing's going to go your way anyway. No. Like you can be like, oh, I'm 3 months into this. My hope bar is full. Everybody's happy. My discontent is manageable. They're fighting it out at the fighting ring, so let them go. You know, you think you've got it, and then all of a sudden it's negative 90 degrees and everybody's getting frostbite in their houses, and you're like, motherfuck.
Oh, Lord. Well, in a game all about consequences and hard decisions, there is one more decision you have to make, and that is $30. What is your verdict?
Is it really only $30?
Yep.
This is one of the best simulators I have ever played. Ever. And I play a lot of these because I'm horribly addicted to every last one of them. It's grueling and it's addictive and it's gritty and it just makes you regret everything you do. And I love it for it.
Nice.
Yeah. Buy it. Buy it twice.
Well, then you buy it twice and buy it for me.
Okay. When I'm not poor, when they decide that I'm disabled, I will buy it for you.
Sounds good. Yeah. Next game to talk about is called A Knight's Quest, developed by Sky9 Games, published by Curve Digital, released October 10th on Switch, PS4, and Epic Games Store, 11th on Xbox One for $24.99. A gorgeous action adventure on an epic scale plays Rusty, a clumsy adventurer who accidentally sets about the end of the world. Solve mind-bending puzzles, fight challenging enemies, defeat huge bosses, and platform your way through a fantastic open world in this lavish action adventure. Cole, tell us about A Knight's Quest.
You ever just be strolling along and accidentally release a horde of demons into the world?
Last week.
Yeah, I call that Tuesday. In this case, you play as Rusty, and that's exactly what he's done. He's a clumsy little stand-in for Link, because this is a very Zelda-like game. Surprise. I don't think anybody saw a game called The Knight's Quest that looks like this, being a Zelda clone. But here it is.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. I will say, though, despite being a Zelda clone, the game kind of permanently has its tongue in its cheek. If you would say, like, Decay of Logos is the Dark Souls of Zelda clones, I think I said that in my review of it, too, by the way.
Probably.
Then A Knight's Quest is the antithesis to that. The complete opposite. It's perfectly okay being lighthearted and funny. To the point
which
that
is what I wanted in Decay of Logos. So it yeah. sounds like this might be the game I'm looking for.
Probably. It's the Zelda clones. No, it's the clumsy Link of Zelda clones. I already said that. Pay attention, Aki. But I mean, it even goes so far as Rusty, like in the beginning, calls his little wooden shield and sword his whacking stick. So, I mean, it doesn't take itself overly seriously, and that's fine. There's a huge 3D open world with some platforming action going on. I will say 3D platforming is shady. You either love it or you hate it. But I think A Knight's Quest handles it well. It gives you free rein of the camera. You can spin around and you know, position yourself so that you can see where you're going and what you're trying to do. It's far more viable than a lot of other 3D platformers in that regard. That doesn't mean that you're not going to make some dumbass jumps that don't work. You will. And that's where you fall into an issue, because sometimes the games, there's no like outward indicator of where your checkpoints are. And sometimes the places it chooses to respawn you are kind of dumb. I was in a dungeon at one point, and I was having to use my elemental ability to rotate these bridges. And I saw some shinies. I have shiny object syndrome. I went for the shinies, and I fell like a jackass. It then spawned me back on the other side of the ravine, but also out of reach of the bridges, so that I couldn't use my wind element to rotate them anymore.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, problematic.
Just a little.
You had, like, I had to really carefully position myself on the edge so that I didn't fall and die for the 974th time trying to do this. So that the wind would actually make it to the turbine that would rotate the bridge. And it was just excessively difficult in a game that is otherwise incredibly accessible to have to try over and over. And if I hadn't have realized that the wind would actually just barely tip that, I probably would have just gave up. The wow. Dogs are mad. Go to bed, dogs. somebody's barking. But I mean, I could have easily seen myself just getting too frustrated and being like, if I had played this after the doctor's appointment, I would have been fucked. I would have just been like, I don't have the patience for this, and that's where this ends at. But I played it before, and I was at least a little bit still human and able to figure out a way around it. That happens, unfortunately, in a lot of different places, that kind of bad checkpoint system. There's not any punishments in the way of death, like, whereas Decay of Logos would, like, absolutely make you hate yourself if you took a hit. A Knight's Quest doesn't punish you. If you die, hey, respawn, do it again. But the respawn points are definitely questionable. There was one, I actually was looking to see if it was happening to other people, too. And I read where one person, in the very beginning, where there's some docks and some boats, and they were trying to see if they could jump onto the boat, but you couldn't at that point, and so he just fell off of the dock, and then the game continuously respawned him falling off the dock.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I'm glad I didn't try that, because I really thought about it. I saw the boat, and I was like, what if I could get on the boat? Oh, and no, there's a shiny over here. And I got sidetracked, and I have never been so grateful for shiny object syndrome.
Wow.
Yeah, because that would have been problematic if that would have happened.
Just a little.
But for the most part, the game plays fairly well. It's just the respawn system. There's no way to know. Like, there's no outward indicator of this is a checkpoint, this is where you will come back at. And I think that could kind of save your ass a little bit to help prevent those moments of just like constantly redying in dumb places. Gameplay wise, it's really neat. You go through the bundle or the bundles. Lord, what did I just read? The dungeons, and you get the elemental abilities that will help you go through more dungeons. You upgrade your sword. A lot of good humor. The writing is really well done. The only other thing that I could complain about in this game is that when you're backtracking out of these dungeons, it's a lot of backtracking and nothing to do. And it's just kind of dull. Like, if there was just, I don't know, imagine a button you could push that would take you back to the beginning of the dungeon. Or a fast travel point. Or anything so that you don't just have to walk back through a whole slew of nothingness.
Yeah.
And that actually kind of, even outside of the dungeons and just in the overworld, there's a lot of walking around where there isn't anything. And the world can feel a little too sparse. It's for the better as far as difficulty goes, because you do have three difficulties, and if you set it to easy, then that's kind of your problem, that there's not a lot there. But even set to hard, which I did once just to see if it was a valid complaint, but set to hard, it was still just really kind of sparse. And there were times where I was just like, I'm doing a whole lot of walking for nothing. But beyond that, it's well done. The humor's good. Characters, I actively wanted to interact with the NPCs to see what dumb shit they were going to say. And I was happy about that. It always paid off. So I was good with that. Yeah.
Well, $25 on a Knight's Quest. What do you think?
I give it, I'm going to go for a really recommended try it, but I worry about the respawns and the potential to be game breaking if you die in just the wrong places.
Yeah.
So that does need fixed more than anything else.
Otherwise, it sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Otherwise, I thought it was funny. I had a good time with it. Generally not mad. I just would like for the respawn issue to be fixed.
Yeah. I might have to check this one out myself, because it sounds like it was what I was looking for in Decay of Logos.
Yeah. I would like a hybrid between a Knight's Quest and Decay of Logos.
Like, so you want a Legend of Zelda. You want the Legend of Zelda.
But no, like, I want it to be pretty and have that unique companion like Decay of Logos, but I want it to have the difficulty of a Knight's Quest. Just let me walk around and do dumb shit and not punish me for it. But make it pretty while I do it.
Makes sense. Next game to talk about is called Community Inc., developed by T4 Interactive, published by Tiny Build. It released October 4th on the Switch for $14.99. Build a happy community and trade with other races for profit. The Lings, your workers, will obey you and help you with your village, but beware, they can cause a lot of problems too. Our friend Serlina, new person writing reviews for us.
I was about to say, who the fuck is this?
Yeah, someone new.
What?
Our good friend Sian, who was going by Serlina, she wrote in her review, and this is what she's got to say. Hey, SML friends and fans, I've had the awesome opportunity to review Community Inc. for the Nintendo Switch by Tiny Build Games. This game is a port from the original game that was released in 2017. The premise of the game is that you are a manager and you have to oversee employees called Lings to build a community on this resource-filled planet. You have goals that each community must achieve in 30 days in order to consider the community a success. Some of the things I liked about the game is that each of your Lings can have different professions provided you have the necessary tools. All Lings start out as builders, but having just builders does not make a community. Want to chop down some trees? Got an axe? If the answer to both of those is yes, then a builder can become a lumberjack. Hey, I'm a lumberjack. Once in the new profession, any action that they can do as relating to that profession nets experience. You need that experience in order to build more stuff or unlock certain professions. One added bonus is that each Ling has certain traits that make them better at certain professions. So when looking at your Ling's profile, pay attention to what's in the lower right-hand corner. It'll tell you what that Ling has a propensity for, which helps in determining how to develop the Lings. Another thing I really liked is that you can trade with the other races on the planet. There are 6 other races that are available to trade with, and every so often you'll get a prompt from one of those races saying that they need stuff. If you have that stuff or are able to make that stuff, then you can accept the contract. In exchange, you get surplus, which is money. Here's the kicker, though. All the races don't get along with each other, so if you help one of them, you're going to make their rival upset, and that rival will let you know they're upset. So if you're not going to keep everyone happy, you balance your dealings as much as possible. If not, get ready for a potential war. Ooh, war. There's a lot that I liked about the game. Unfortunately, there's a lot of problems with the game that I couldn't ignore. The main problem with the game is the HUD display, heads-up display, display. HUD is heads-up display. Yeah, the HUD display Yes, the main problem with the game is the HUD and its relation with its controls. On the Switch, each of the menus that you need to access is on the sides of the screen. You have to press the corresponding D-pad direction to access the menu, then scroll up and down to get to the option that you need. It's fairly obvious that on the PC, you can click what you need to get, but on the Switch, it's an uncomfortable mess. The game does support touchscreen, but it's very minimal. You can use the touchscreen to move the camera around, but I never had any camera problems, so that control scheme is not useful. Getting the Lings to do their job is another annoyance. The way the game is supposed to work is that you highlight whatever you need the Ling to do by pressing and holding A and dragging the green cursor over to highlight it. This very rarely happened in my time with the game. I would feverishly move the stick while holding A, hoping to highlight a tree so I could get its wood so I could make stuff. My frustration grew every time I did what I was supposed to do, and the game was like, nah, don't want to. This happened with every profession that didn't work autonomously. Finally, I felt the game was a little too slow. It would take so long to perform tasks and build things that I got bored as I was waiting for my Lings to do what I wanted them to do. I understand that that time is an important feature in the game, but the time needs to pass quickly enough to where I feel like I'm actually accomplishing something rather than waiting for each task to finish before I can finally begin the next one. I really, really wanted to like this game. It has a lot of elements that appeal to me. Resource management, community building, relationship management. However, with the state of the controls and not being able to actually play the game by the way it's meant to actually be played really dampened my enthusiasm. Currently, you can buy Community Ink on the Switch for $14.99. At that price, I have to give it a deny it. With the issues, it's simply not worth it. However, if the price were ever to drop under $10, I would consider trying it. I do feel that there's a decent game here that's hidden under massive amounts of aggravation. All right.
Mm.
That's a good review. Good starting review.
Suddenly, I feel inadequate.
Don't worry. You make me feel inadequate all the time.
So just how you feel then.
Yay.
Damn.
We're useless.
Do not like.
High five. next game to talk about is called Draw a Stickman Epic 2, developed and published by HitSense, released October 9th on the Xbox One for $6.99. Imagination is the key as you enter a magical storybook land full of mystery and wonder, unusual creatures, and enigmatic puzzles. Create your own original Stickman and then watch it come to life and draw Stickman Epic 2 and the Drawn Below expansion. Challenge yourself to unlock every secret, collect every drawing, and share your creativity with the world. Cole, tell us about Draw Stickman Epic 2.
I have suddenly questioned myself as an artist after playing this game. I imagine that playing this on PC with, like, where I could use my pen and tablet would be a lot more ideal than playing with a controller. I spent years drawing with a mouse. I could handle a mouse, but drawing with a controller is a horse of a whole different color. My character is the most ridiculous looking thing ever, is what I'm trying to say. She's got orange hair. She's very pink. She's literally a stick person. She's got yellow feet. Sometimes the game gets confused because I gave her feet, but not hands. So like when I had to get a tool and draw myself a pickaxe, sometimes she carries the pickaxe in her feet.
Nice.
That makes things more interesting. Because I'm going around breaking all the blocks
with your feet.
Oh. there was the added element of, because this is Draw a Stickman 2, you get to draw two stickmen. So I drew myself, and then it's like, give yourself a friend. And I'm like, that's a great idea. So I draw D. I did far better at drawing D for some reason than I did drawing me. But there might be something. Did you draw a dick?
Of course I drew a dick.
Like, I was struggling so hard with drawing anything that I didn't think I could do a dick justice. And now I want to see your dick with, like, the pickaxe.
Oh, God. The dick axe.
Yes. Now all your tools that you get to draw have to be dicks. Yes. Well, you've done it. Sucks to be you. anyway. I did David. And then I suddenly learned the hard way that your friend is the bad guy. And so now I'm chasing after my husband who has turned evil in this storybook. And then I had to explain to him what I had done. Because you can't just turn your husband evil in a game and not tell him.
I mean, you can, but that can, takes the fun out of it.
Fun in that. That's a that would be unfortunate to not be like, look, you got ink on you, and now you're a bad guy. Sucks to be you. I was so sad. I spent so much time and care and effort into that stick man, and then he goes bad on me. Also, that brings up horrible feelings of like when a painting doesn't come out the way you want. And then I was sitting here like all sad. It's a horrible way to start the game. Maybe I should have drawn dicks, and then I would have felt better about everything.
Oh, God.
My next tool is going to be a dick. when you're in the storybook, you have to help out the other little stick people. Ink has kind of corrupted everything. You'll find crayons that you can use to change the world. I never played the first Draw Stick Man. I'm assuming this is all very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the same premise. But, like, you have ink monsters, which just hurts my feelings because it's Inktober. Why does ink have to be the bad guy? I was just like, the whole time I was like, but ink is my baby. Anyway, use crayons. Like, if there are trees, they're dead. But you have a leaf crayon and you can draw leaves. Which I just started very hopelessly making the best circles I could around them and going, well, good luck. Sometimes I would have like green squiggles going all the way across the screen and back. And I'm like, look, somewhere around that tree branch, it made a loop and I'm good with it. Thankfully, the game is very forgiving in your bullshit.
It is.
You don't need artistic ability. Thank God. But yeah, you'll want to draw leaves on the trees, and that helps fight back the ink monsters. As you progress, you'll get different crayons, do different things. You know, you can, turn water into ice so that you can cross it, for example, or you'll have your pickaxe, which you can use to bust up rocks, and you might find things in the rocks. You can use it to defeat enemies. There's so many potential things that you can do with the game that, you know, with what you draw. Oh, I said asana. Shit. to like change the storybook so that you can explore more and more of it. It has a bit of a Metroidvania feel because you can go back to previous chapters and use new tools and new crayons that you have unlocked or found so that you can change the world a little more. Additionally, you'll need to find color buddies so that you can unlock extra colors. And some of the colors are necessary to use it with your tools because they will unlock certain doors and gates and things like that. So you need to be mindful of how you're using the colors in your tools. Even if everything looks like a dick, it has to be a properly colored penis.
I just like Ian making fun of you in chat.
It's very distracting.
Excuse me while I go grab a slice of pie and wash it all down with ice cold glass of ice tea.
I'm gonna correct you because we don't say wash unless I'm like forcing myself. If I were just casually speaking, I would say wash. So yeah, it'd be like it's the washing machine.
Oh, my Lord. So Stickman Epic 2, $7. What do you think of it?
Is it really only $7?
Yeah, $6.99.
The game is crazy with how much there is to it. Like, I don't want to be all spoilery as part of my problem. while also like, explaining it. But, yeah, there's a lot to enjoy, and you can just kind of get lost and have fun with it. And I give it a definite buy. It's very well done, especially with the extra expansion too.
Yeah, a lot of content.
Yeah, you're gonna be doodling dicks for a while. Now I'd like to see them use that as box art.
Yeah. Use that as a box quote. You'll be doodling dicks for hours. Sorry, Hit Sense.
Yeah, my bad. It's a thing. Have you seen like some of the screenshots of people who play on PC and like they draw Groot and stuff?
And yeah, I'm it's like, insane.
You guys are ridiculous. Also, I would totally do it if I were playing it on PC. I should look and see if it's play anywhere. It's $7. It's probably not, but it might be.
I don't think it is.
I'm going to hope. Because I really want to use my... It would at least be a little easier if it had mouse and keyboard support. I don't know if it does. Probably does not. Again, probably does not, but...
I mean, the point isn't to draw a masterpiece artwork.
But I want to draw a masterpiece. I want to draw the best dick sword ever.
Oh, my Lord. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Worse Than Death, developed and published by Benjamin Rivers, released October 8th on Xbox One for $9.99. Run for your life, hide in the shadows, and use your wits to avoid shadowy creatures and uncover the terrible truths of your wretched hometown. Solve devious puzzles to reveal the emotionally charged story of Holly and her friends that will have you hooked until the very end. Cole, tell us about Worse Than Death.
So, Worse Than Death is one of those horror games, surprise, it's horror, which you really won't get. Like, the first few seconds, your first few minutes of the game, you're like, okay, this is about people going to a high school reunion, and it's very point and clicky and kind of mundane, and you're getting a lot of backstory. And then all of a sudden, it just shits the bed, and you shit yourself. It's very much one of those stories about learning to deal with your past and not letting it bog you down into your future. It's very heavy subject matter for a game that looks like it does. The story is told through cutscenes that are very well illustrated. They look like they come straight out of a comic book. If you had handed me this as a comic book, I'd been like, yeah, I'd read it. The art is fantastic for those scenes. The gameplay falls back on that retro pixel art style. I bitch about it a lot. It's not my favorite. I kind of think it's a little on the cheap side for when it comes to horror. Because there's so little detail, it makes things seem scarier than it is, but it's kind of a cheap trick to use for it, if that makes sense. So I bitched about it in Uncanny Valley. I bitched about it in The Long Reach. I bitched about it in Ellen. I'm bitching about it now. I will say, out of the smorgasbord of pixel art horror that I have had fall into my lap, pixel art-wise, Worse Than Death is one of the better ones. It does have more detail, and it goes out of its way to see that the environments and the sprites look more natural despite the pixel element. Characters, you can tell the difference between the characters. They're not all just like lanky blocks sludging around. And I appreciate that. Even though I get frustrated with the art style, it's not my favorite. I'm really goddamn tired of it. I would have loved for the whole game to have had the comic book style that's in the cutscenes. And I think the reason that frustrated me more and I wanted that element more, yeah, it's in the cutscenes, but there are, when you are playing and you are moving around in the world, it's that pixelated world. But whenever you interact with a character, the dialogue box comes up and it's that same comic book style avatar that you see for the dialogue and everything. And it's like, if you could animate it for that, you could have just done the whole game that way and it would have looked so much better and I would have been a lot happier.
I'm sure it would have been a lot more work though.
Probably. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it's a really small, might even be just one dude who makes this game.
Yeah.
But I get it, but oh, man, the art for everything else is so good. And then it just, the comic book or the pixel art for the playthrough. a girl can dream. Anyway, you play as Holly, who has gone back home for her high school reunion. Some unfortunate circumstances have happened. You get very small bits and pieces of the story as you point and click your way through the whole reunion. You'll be exploring the high school that you graduated from. And then, like I said, it goes from, this is a little weird and awkward, to, holy fuck, I'm being chased by an evil being that is known as Unseen Horrors. That's literally what they're called. And you have to, like, find dark doorways to hide in or hide in a locker. 9 times out of 10, it does not matter. It will get you anyway. I struggled really bad with those chase sequences. You know what they reminded me of, gameplay-wise? The Coma. That Korean horror, the horror game where the teacher is chasing you through the school and you have literally hide from it. The Coma recut. And I was like, this is so similar in gameplay mechanics. Not to a negative. It's really well done. In fact, I would argue that they even do some things better and worse than death than the Coma. The audio cues are your most important cues, which normally I would bitch about because I don't hear well. And if I can't hear audio cues and I'm going to get killed by something off screen, I'm going to be mad about it. But they do a good job of working in visual cues to let you know when Holly is in danger as well. So, predominantly you'll hear her heartbeat, and that's your cue that she's getting scared, something is around, and you need to hide. But she also has a bar at the bottom of the screen for her stamina. And when her heart is beating and she's scared, that bar also shakes and turns pink. So it gives you a visual cue as well as an audio one that, hey, yeah, shit's about to pop off and you need to be careful. And I appreciate that they went out of their way to do that. A lot of times you see that you get either one or the other in horror games. Yeah. And they tend to forget, you know, the middle ground. So at least Worse Than Death, you know, does that. And I definitely appreciate it. The Unseen Horrors, they're mostly invisible because of that pixel art style. Well, they are unseen. Well, you can kind of see a bit of them, but you can't really make out what it is. So that's where the pixel art style comes into play. As I said, it kind of just like you get just enough detail to know that shit is bad, but not enough to know like what's genuinely terrorizing you. But it's really well done, even though it's frustrating to me. I want to see what's tormenting me. I'm one of those people, like, I want all the gore. There are some scenes where it uses like a hybrid of the comic book style and the pixel art style too. And I think that was another reason why I was just like, you could have just done it all. Because it's so much scarier when you have all the details in my mind. And I know there are people who like get scared by the unknown more, but I want to see the gore. I want to know what's going to chase me down and haunt me. But yeah, all in all, the game boils down to just being like, it's a really good story about, you know, dealing with your past and not being haunted by it. Trying to avoid any spoilers in that regard. but yeah, it's really well written. I liked the way that they peppered the details into the dialogue, though, and they didn't necessarily like ham fist it down you as to what had happened. But at the same time, it was a little frustrating sometimes because they were trying to drag it out. Like the certain elements, I'm really trying not to spoil. Certain elements are intentionally vague, too long to the point that it's frustrating.
No.
That said, the whole game is like under 4 hours. So it's not like you're on cliffhanger for 4 days while you're trying to play through it. Well, you're going to figure it out eventually.
Yeah. Well, as it stands, $10, what do you think of Worse Than Death?
I definitely think it's worth $10. It's definitely one of the better pixel art horror games out there.
So the game itself is not Worse Than Death.
No. Bad joke. I'm hanging up now.
You can't, because we have another game to talk about.
Fuck! When am I going to be free?
Never. Next game to talk about is called Super Box Land Demake, developed by Light Up, published by Rattleaka Games. It released October 8th on PS4 and Vita, 9th on Xbox One, 11th on the Switch for $4.99. Push your way through puzzling challenges, pick from two characters to help solve moving box puzzles in order to advance to the next stage. Push boxes across a variety of different puzzling levels by yourself or with a friend in co-op mode. Control two different characters at once, even in single player. Choose from three difficulty options that make recovering from your mistakes even harder. Cole, tell us about Super Box Land Demake.
This is going to sound horrible, and I don't mean it as bad as it's about to sound, but I literally forgot I played this. I'm blaming my fried brain on that one. You might be able to find my brain in the kitchen on a skillet at this point, but I did just forget, and it was only like 4 hours ago. So
wow.
I know
you need a nap.
I took one is the worst part.
You need another nap.
Oh, that's so sad, and I'm really apologetic about it. Shit, but I had to share because it was funny. You said the name, and I was like, what is this again? Oh, yeah.
Rattleaka, that's right.
Oh, good old Rattleaka, man. They don't let us down. So this is... I guess technically this is pixel art as well, but it's not like retro pixel art to an extreme degree. It's just kind of cute little chibi pixel art more. You can play as two characters, boy and a girl. You definitely want to play as two characters if you want to make it easier on yourself. It is literally just a box mover. Each level is a puzzle. It's laid out with different obstacles in your path. There are boxes scattered around. There are little pods that you want to move the boxes onto so that the gate opens up and you can get the fuck out and do it again. I think there were 100 levels. 100 or 120?
I think 100.
Might be 100. Yeah.
Honestly, it doesn't matter because it's a Rattleaka game.
And you're going to stop gonna at 40 when you get the achievement anyway.
Yeah.
Which I haven't even done yet. I haven't gone through all 40. I haven't gone through all 100 because I took that nap. I'm sorry. But when you've done 30 some odd levels of a box moving puzzle game, you kind of know what you're expecting here. It's very simple puzzles. Like I said, though, I did find it was a lot easier to play two-player, even though I was playing solo and controlling both characters. It takes, like, an overcooked approach to the controller and just splits it in half. So your left thumbstick controls one and your right thumbstick controls the other. I don't know. It would be kind of uncomfortable to try to play it with a friend like that. And I don't think there's an option for actually plugging in a second controller, is there?
I would imagine there is.
Share the controller? I didn't try. I just assumed it was share the controller and get over it.
Because when you hit the Y button to bring in the second character...
It does say player one or player two.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe you can share or split, use two controllers. Fuck, I don't know words. Use two controllers. I'm sorry. either way. Most people are going to play it solo and just either play with one character or two characters on the one controller. The reason I keep saying if you're playing solo, use two anyway, is because there are times where if you were playing alone, some of the more complicated puzzles, the solution is more difficult to get across with just one character. Whereas if you have the second character on the screen, even if you're not always using them, you can sometimes position them between a wall and a box to keep the box from going too far and getting in a position where you can no longer push it.
Yeah.
I would do that a lot. I would not use the second character hardly any, but then there may be one box where, oh, if I just put them in this corner, then it's going to let me get a bump on the box that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to get with just one character. There are, I think there's 20 levels in a world. And after the first world, then, or after a world, when you've completed one, you have this weird little, airplane sequence where your characters are in an airplane. Just let one, if you're playing solo with two, just let one of the airplanes blow up. Don't try to control them both, because you're just going to drive yourself insane. But you, the airplane sequence is a little weird, because there are balloons and there are bombs. And there's no score, and there's no reason for this. It's just like a segue to the next world. But there's no justification for it. It's just like,
it's just to mix it up.
Do this while it loads, you know? And it's a little odd, but it's not a negative in any way. You're just sitting there the whole time going, why am I doing this again? And I never quite figured out, like, I don't know what triggered it to say I was done with it or why. There was just a whole lot of why involved with that little sequence.
It makes no sense in the scheme of the rest of the game. It's just traveling from one point to another.
But it's not in any way, like, it doesn't detract. You just don't know why it's there.
Yeah.
And it just kind of exists. And you're like, okay, well, thanks for the achievements. Bye. And that's basically all it's good for. You can get the two oddball achievements in the very first one. And you're like, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Carry on. Gonna go collect or finish out the other 40 levels and call it a day.
Yeah, that's about everything you could say about this game. So $5 on Superland D-Make, what do you think?
If you want a quick, easy completion, it's a Rataleika and you've probably already bought it. I will say, I give these developers, Rataleika's the publisher, and then a different people develop these little games.
Yeah.
I don't know the difference of one from Adam. Every time we get a Rataleika game, it's had a different developer. But they seem to be pretty consistent in how they develop. And I will say, all of them have made games that are functional and have an insane amount of levels, even if you have no reason to play all of them beyond just, hey, that was kind of fun. Let's just keep doing it. And I give them major credit for that.
Yeah, you got to give them credit.
I was waiting for you to do Droppin' Bits.
See, I didn't know if you had more to say there.
Well, Droppin' Bits! I saw bits. I knew what was coming.
Yeah, no time dropping 45 bits in chat. George, take it away again.
Droppin' Bits! Wet pancakes!
Wet pancakes.
Thank you. Austin did it too. God damn it.
Awesome drops and biddies too.
Wet pancakes! Wet pan... Wet! Wet! Wet pancakes!
Wet pancakes!
I'm just having fun playing wet pancakes over and over and over.
Wet pancakes!
That was too wet. Oh no!
Wet pancakes. Oh, no time and awesome. Thank you for the biddies. No time. Thank you for the sub earlier before we went live as well. I forgot to give you a shout out for that one. So
wet pancakes.
Wet pancakes indeed. All right, we got to get Dark Meek in here. Yeah. Let's add her to the call. Let's see if she's there. I did tell her that she was up next. So, there she is.
Titty Sprinkles. Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing today, Aki?
I'm still playing Code Vein.
I know you wanted to talk about Code Vein.
Tropico and delete it.
That's not going to happen. I've gotten about half the achievements that ain't happened until I finished the game 3 times.
Damn.
Man.
Yeah, there's 3 different endings, and there's an achievement for each one, so I have to beat it 3 times. But, yeah, so I'm not even halfway through it, I don't think. I've probably put, like, 40 hours in this game already.
Damn.
I was literally, like, an hour into Frostpunk when I messaged Joe and was like, I'm going to have to give it the Tropico treatment. I just have to delete it to save myself. I have to do that with literally all those management sim. I had to do it with Surviving Mars, too. And then I downloaded it on the computer, and I'm too afraid to, like, launch it because I know I'm going to get sucked in.
You know, usually when I have review games, I'm okay. Once it's due, I just put it down, and I move straight to the next one. I have to say, this so far, this is one of the very few of them where I've picked it up, and I just don't want to put the fucking thing down. I've really enjoyed this so far, so.
It happens.
Awesome Prime just clipped the wet pancakes. Oh, geez. So, Dark Mika, I know that you wanted to chat about Code Vein real quick before you go into your review. So, what did you want to say about Code Vein?
I love it. Like, it's very anime Dark Souls. So anime Dark Souls. But it's much easier, so I assume anyways, than the other Dark Souls games. It's the only one I've ever been super, super interested in, because anime titties. like, my character, as Pernell was saying yesterday, there's lots of customization. The best looking outfit to me was also had one of the dumbest parts of the outfit. Outfit looks great. It has a fucking stupid boob window.
Like, I like boob windows.
I think they're so stupid. I'm like, just get a V-cut shirt and a push-up bra. Like, Jesus Christ, there doesn't need to be a fucking boob window. Like, under boob, fine. The cleavage, fine. Boob window, that's fucking stupid. I hate it. Like, I'm good with the boob
windows.
I appreciate boobs, not boob windows. I think they're so dumb. But I got this gifted to me, and oh my god, I love this game so much. And it has some nice mechanics. Like, if you need help in it, you can send out a distress signal, or even look for them if you feel arrogant enough. And a player will come into your game, providing they find it. And they're there for either one boss or for just a random amount of time, and then they disappear. It's really useful. I've used them so many times because I got all the way into an area where you're supposed to be level 70 at level 19.
Ooh.
Yeah, I had worked my way through level 20 stuff, level 30 stuff, level 40, 50, 60, and I ended up in level 70 stuff. All while still being a level 16, or 19. I was like, God, this shit's so hard. And the last person who I teamed up with was like, what, were you level 1? I was like, no, level 19. Why is that under level? They were like, yeah, you should be level 60 for this area. I was like, oh, well then.
Oh, God.
There is one issue I find with the customization.
And what's that?
There's a bunch of slots for accessories, which Pernell talked about last time, but there's also a cost limit, and every item has a specific cost between 1 and I think the highest is 4, and once that cost is up, you can't add anything else to your character, even if you have slots open. Like, I have like 3 different slots right now, but I have 1 cost left. It's like, you motherfucker, I want to add more shit because there's room for me to add more shit, and it won't let me, and it drives me nuts.
No shit for you.
Exactly. And like Pernell, I am all about all the belts. We both went full on anime for this motherfucker, apparently.
Nice.
Oh, but yeah, it's really fun. I highly suggest this fucking game. You're definitely gonna put in the hours into this. I think it's what, $60?
Yeah.
I assume. Yeah. You're going to put well over 60 hours into this game just on your first playthrough, I'm sure. Its story is amazing. I cannot suggest this highly enough. I love this game. And I honestly didn't think I'd like it that much. I figured I'd like the visuals, but I'd hate the actual gameplay because Dark Souls plus blind equals no bueno. but no, I fucking love this game. It is so goddamn fun. I think I might actually play Dark Souls because of this.
Don't do it. It's a trick.
I'm pretty sure it's a trick, yeah. But I gotta try it.
Oh, well, I guess we'll find out how that works in the future, but for now, are you ready to talk about your game?
Yeah.
All right, because the next game to talk about is called Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair, developed by Playtonic Games, published by Team 17, released October 8th on Xbox One, Switch, Steam, and PS4 for $29.99. Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair is a brand new platform adventure from some of the key creative talent behind Donkey Kong Country. As the colorful buddy duo, you must tackle a series of stunning 2.5D levels and explore a puzzling 3D overworld rich with secrets and surprises. Aki, tell us about Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair.
Holy crap, you actually said my name. Usually you just say Dark Mika.
I know. Oh, I'm trying to go back to the normal name.
I'm perfectly fine with that. well, this is an action platformer. You play as Yooka-Laylee, obviously, which is a cute little lizard and its bat buddy.
He's a chameleon.
I didn't know what kind of lizard he was. So I just knew he was a chameleon. Lizard. Okay. Oh, he's so adorable. His eyes don't stick out far enough for a chameleon. Anyways, I'm really into reptiles. I love reptiles. Everyone in this game seems to be from the first game. I haven't played the first game, but it seems like every character is from. I have the first game. I just haven't played it. So I have like 800 Steam games. You gotta give me credit. I've only had Steam for like 2 years.
That's pretty good for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, nearing 1,000 games. I haven't even played even 100 of them yet. So I'll get there one day. Yeah, and I'm still buying more. I just bought another fucking game this weekend. But everyone seems to be from the previous game. So if you've played the first game, you'll know all the people. There's the evil
Capital B,
okay. Yeah, I just called him B-Man because I was like, I don't know what the fuck his name is. He's a B and his name is B, and that's all I remember. he's created a new invention called the Hive Mind, which he uses to brainwash all the bees to do his bidding, and you just are there to stop him. And that's the story. It's very nice, cut, dry, simple. I was expecting this to be more like Banjo-Kazooie. It actually looks a lot more like Crash Bandicoot, just on a 2D plane instead of 3D, and I can appreciate that. This makes it a lot easier for me.
The first one was very much a Banjo-Kazooie clone.
Yeah, okay, the whole 3D.
Yeah, yeah, 3D, like camera hell and all.
Okay, that's what I thought I had heard about the first game, but after playing the second, I was like, okay, I must be thinking about a different game, because this is nothing like that.
Nope. You're on par. They just really switched it up for this one. I think it's to the benefit of the game.
Yeah, I like this style. It works really well. The only time where I've had any issues in the game is during the hub world area, because sometimes there's cliffs and shit, since you can't move the fucking camera. there's cliffs and shit that sometimes you have to walk behind to hit chests and shit like that, and it's like, can't fucking see because I can't move the camera. It kind of drives me
sad. The first game as a whole suffers from that to a detriment. The hub world in Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair is far more manageable.
Yeah, it's not too bad. As a matter of fact, that's what I spent a surprisingly large amount of time instead of playing levels just fucking around the hub world. Because after playing, like, I played like I think it was 6-7 levels, and there's two versions for every level as well, except for maybe the first one, or I haven't unlocked that one, at least, I don't know. And I played both versions of, like, 6 different levels. After that, I was just opening things and trying to figure out every route possible and getting everything I could get in the hub world. And the hub world is so fucking big. Like, when you're in any individual area, it doesn't seem like it's all that big. It is fucking huge. And there's a lot of collectibles. There's tonics in the game, which I assume are also in the first game. Mm-hmm. But there are little things that you can equip that lots of them actually end up changing how the game looks. But there's also a chunk that affects gameplay, be it like making your character faster, giving you the ability to attack underwater or in the air, things like that. There's 62 of them in total.
Yeah. And one of them is, like, most of them have a clue or some way to help you find them, but there is one that the game specifically says, we hit it without a clue, good luck. And unless it has changed, the last time I played it on Xbox about 3 or 4 days ago, it was still at 0.0%. Nobody had found it.
Huh. I bet I know which one it is. There's 61 of them, yeah, I assume you probably find from that, but the last one is for unlocking all the gates, all the trouser snake.
Nope, I have that one.
Oh, well, motherfucker. I don't know. Since I'm playing on Steam, I actually have all of them but one because the devs, you know, for reviewers, they help you along. So I actually have all but that, the one from the trouser snake. Is that his name, Trouser?
Yes.
Okay, yes, trouser, so he's a snake and he's trouser, so he's a trouser snake. All right, lovely. Oh, Lord. Just like, well, there's Vindy, the vending machine lady, too. I mean, and then there's Queen Bee, who is a queen bee.
Yeah, she's Phoebe. Queen Phoebe.
Oh, I didn't see
Phoebe.
Yeah. And then it's not the battalion that you're looking for help with, it's the B-talion.
B-talion. Yeah, this game is all about
puns. It was written by Carnage, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. All the puns. I believe that shit. Yeah. I put about 25 hours into it so far. I'm really liking it. Some of the levels are very difficult. But I think that's probably because some levels you are very much supposed to have certain tonics equipped in order to beat them properly. And I just kind of keep the same fucking ones equipped at all times because I don't... There's too many. 62 of the fucking things.
I am convinced there's a double jump tonic that I haven't found yet. Like, I just want there to be a double jump. There is not. Then how are you supposed to get some of those fucking coins?
When you magic. When you jump on an enemy, if you do the little... if you hit jump and do the spinny thing immediately... Yeah. You'll go up much higher.
Yeah, there's a tonic that lets you... It puts googly eyes on all the enemies.
Yes.
And so that gives you a second chance to fuck up, because you have to hit them twice to knock the googly eyes off.
Oh, Lord.
And the tonics, they do... they affect the quills that you earn as currency.
Yeah, some of them take away to give more.
Yeah, so some of them... you know, can be a detriment, and if it's like, you know, 0.7 times, then you're going to lose quills at the end of the level. However, if you put on tonics that make it more difficult, then you get bonus quills for doing it, which can be helpful if you're trying to save up money for more tonics. Put on some of the more difficult ones and go back to the easier levels and just grind out quills. Because unlike...
There you go.
In the first game, the quills were a collectible and there were just a set amount of them in the world. But in Ukulele and the Impossible Lair, they're used as a currency. And so you can just constantly get more of them. There's even a tonic that makes it so that when you kill an enemy, they burst into quills. So if you're trying to really like rack up a lot of quills, because sometimes you have to, buy things that will change the world or let you access different areas, and you may need 1,000 or 1,500 quills for that. So if you put on the tonic that makes them explode into quills, and then the one that gives them the googly eyes so that it ups your multiplier because it makes it a little more difficult, and then there's one that makes it so you don't lose your quills on death.
Yes.
So then you can balance it out so that you get more quills per level, and you can rack them up really quickly that way.
At the end of most levels, I end up having like 300 because I suck at the game, but then it turns around, and because I have it set, I have three equipped that bring it down to 0.3, I end up with 90. Like, it works, whatever. I beat the level. That's good enough for me. Fuck it.
But that's the good thing about it. Like, that's the closest it gets to a punishment. And that was one of the things that I liked about Yooka-Laylee and Impossible Lair, was that if you were struggling, there wasn't any punishment for just skipping ahead to the next area. I didn't ever do it, but there wasn't a punishment.
You lose the chance to get coins.
Yeah.
There's 5 coins for each level, and if you skip an area, you're probably going to miss a fucking coin.
You're going to miss a couple coins.
Fuck that.
But, that's the biggest issue you're going to run into. It doesn't take, there's no timer. You can move it the levels at your own pace. You know, you can explore around. You can even equip a tonic that lets you slow time down
up to 3 times, I think.
Struggling. Yeah, up to 3 times. Although I don't recommend the slow motion one is deceptive, like, because I thought it was going to slow down the level but let me keep moving at least a normal pace. It does not. You move slow motion too, and I wanted to rip my hair out because there was a level where there's like a ball on a chain chasing after you for big chunks of the level. And I thought, fuck that, I'll slow it down. At least get through it.
Yeah, there's one for making your character run faster and run super fast and spin faster and spin super fast. So you can make your character Sonic.
Yeah, or slam harder. You can do the buddy slam harder. That one has an added benefit too, that if there are quills or coins up above you and you do the buddy slam,
then it
knocks everything down to your level. So you don't have to try to do the crazy ass jumps for it.
Yeah, what I personally equip is a magnet, which pulls all the quills to you. One that allows you to stay in the air longer. What was the third one? I don't know what the third one is. It doesn't matter.
You can eventually have 4.
Yeah, that's the one tonic I'm missing, is that one, because you have to get it by buying all the trouser snake shit.
That's actually, it's a spoiler.
No, don't spoil anything.
Yeah, I shut up. Never mind.
The two of you are making me incredibly jealous, because I still haven't gotten my copy from fucking Best Buy yet, because things can never go right for me. But
you'll be shortchanged.
$30 on this one. What do you two think of it?
Yeah, for $30.
Absolutely. Yeah. I give it a buy. I think that Yooka-Laylee and the Impossible Lair is leaps and bounds better than the first Yooka-Laylee. So if you like that one at all, if you're attached to the characters in any kind of way, you're missing out if you're not playing this one.
I think it's worth it. And you can even give this to your kids. This is a very kid-friendly game. The levels are overwhelmingly fairly easy for the most part. They're bright and colorful. Kids would fucking love this game. I am all for it.
The only thing that I wanted to gripe about that we didn't bring up yet is that there's one, no, because it's such a tiny, like, minuscule thing, but it did kind of bug me. A lot of times, especially in the levels where you're being chased, it's easy to lose track of Yooka and Laylee because they don't stand out enough from the background. Everything is so hyper saturated and so colorfully illustrated that, yeah, it's pretty, but sometimes it's a little hard to keep track of them because they kind of blend back into the background a little too much.
See, I only found one level where you got chased. I only played one of those, and I couldn't move fast enough to get a coin and keep going. The first coin and keep going. So I was like, fuck it, I'm done with this. And then I went about just playing more of the hub world. So I really like the hub world. It is adorable, and it's fun, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, if you like the hub world more, you definitely want to play the first one because it's very similar.
Okay, I'll have to do that sometime soon then.
Well, it's part of Game Pass.
Yeah.
I also have it on Steam, so...
Well, you could earn achievements on Game Pass.
This is true. I think I'll play it on Steam first, just to make sure I can actually 100% it. And if I can, then I'll play it on the Xbox.
There you go. Well, Dark Mika, always a pleasure having you on chatting. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
I'm sorry that Best Buy doesn't treat you right. I bought the deluxe edition of Control from Best Buy recently and had no trouble. Game places just don't like your ass. I've never had a problem with Amazon either, which you always have trouble with, you poor thing. The game gods love me.
Oh man, Dark Mika is insane, is she not?
Uh-oh. Yes, very much so.
Dark Mika on your friends with mode. Something like it's one of the things where it's like, she knows who I am and there's comments and stuff and you guys talk about it. I have no clue who this person is. I'm just a mysterious witch named Dark Mika, and she's cast spells and shit.
Pernell, do you not listen to the show?
I do listen to the show, but to put it in perspective, I don't listen to my own show. Like, I'm bad at listening to stuff.
But Aki's on my show. Oh, you don't listen to that either, huh?
On this too?
Huh?
Oh, I didn't know you have another show that aside from this one, too?
No.
Well, no, it's just because we do two a week, one with her and then one with the rest of you guys.
Oh, okay, that's what she meant. That's what happened.
By the way, Pernell's here to close out the show. Pernell, how are you doing?
You know what happened?
Oh, we're doing it live. Oh, well, then, I'm doing adequately.
The Tide Pods then went to his head.
Tone change from your code switch. Hello, everyone. I'm having a fantastic day. I just had a nice glass of wine and a delectable steak made from fresh rat, and I am ready to discuss matters.
That's an impressive white voice. Like, I can't even do a white voice like that.
That's not a white voice. That's a dignified voice. That's debonair.
You the one that said code switching. That's when you switch to the white voice.
No, code switching is anything. It could have to be white. It could be, hey, I come from the inner city, and now it's time to go to a nice posh party up in the hills. Time to code switch. Hello, everyone. How are you doing? I got to switch. Yo, what's up? Or I go out down to, like, you know, I don't know, an area down, like, that's suburban, but may as well be urban because it's not quite. And you're like, yo, 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 what you doing there, dear man? What's up? I don't even fucking know. I don't listen to enough. But the point is, code switching goes beyond race. It's also just social environments. So,
I want to hear your redneck voice now.
I don't even really have one. Just
say ass.
I think it would be painful to try.
Ass-tay.
See, that sounds painful to hear. Like, I don't even know if my voice could survive that one. It's like,
do it, Pernell, do it.
Like, hey, everybody, want some water? I got some water in the basement. And when we get real deal, we got some corn boiling. Oh, baby. Yeah, we're going to eat that corn. Oh, yeah. Y'all hungry or what? Is y'all hungry? We got food up in here. We going to be eating.
This sounds like a Popeyes commercial.
He's got to get done with the worshin' first, though.
Worshin'.
Worshin'.
I don't even know. You got me really trying to figure out what exactly is redneck code. Like, do I need to listen to Jeff Foxworthy? No, he doesn't speak redneck.
He doesn't.
Bad jokes.
He does not have an accent that's sufficiently redneck.
See, because like, I have a family from in the South, but it's not redneck. It's just rural. Like, there's, I think there's redneck and then there's country. My relatives are country. So, and that's where, like, the, like, for example, there was a grocery store chain down there years ago. It's not there anymore. It was called like Star Mart or something. They would, when they would pronounce it, it would sound like they were saying Starfire. And we were like, what the hell are you talking about? We're going Starfire? What is Starfire? That's a Teen Titans character. What is Starfire? Oh, it's the grocery Star Mart. Okay, let's go to Star Mart that's somehow on fire. And then they always call me Parnell. I'm like, I'm Parnell. There are no A's in my name. Not a single one. All E-R and shit. All right, Parnell, get stop. But that's what I mean. It's all like, that's country. They just make up sounds and words, mm-hmm. and it just comes out. And you're like, all right, I accept it. When in Rome, I'm good for that.
I forget who it was, but someone with the show used to call you Parnell for the longest time. I'm like, no, man, it's Parnell. Parnell. He would just get confused because of Chris Parnell from Saturday Night Live.
The young guy that used to be on here.
CJ?
Yeah, CJ. I used to tease him all the time. Like, man, you don't know Gage. You're too young.
There you go. You're CJ. That's how memorable he is.
Damn.
He just didn't come on very much. And when we would come on, he didn't talk much. Unless I was teasing him. He was a co-host. I just teased him a lot about stuff.
Well, same. I just tell him fuck off all the time.
Like, come on, relax. Ain't that big. No. I don't understand. You don't understand, Purnell. You understand what it's like to have to deal with all these games. Like, look here, man. You know how old I am? I'm like 70, okay? I understand. I've been playing games when your ass was an embryo. Don't get started. I am your grandfather in gaming. I always laugh at that, too. Like, I feel like, is it just me or... So when we were growing up, our parents would not adhere to new tastes in music. They never really wanted to follow up on new trends in fashion or movies or whatever. They just kind of had their own thing. And of course, when we're kids, you're always like, you know, I'm going to be different. I'm going to be cool when I get older. I'm going to know all the shit. And of course, you become an adult and certain things do fall because you realize why too. Your parents is like, I don't feel like following anymore. I got enough stuff I'm looking into. I'm going to ignore this area. But I feel like video games though, not even close. I never lost track of that. If anything, I feel like I'm more knowledgeable about video games than the younger generation. I went to the gym the other day, and one of the guys that works there is a really cool dude, but he's a youngin'. And he didn't know that Sega used to make game consoles. He was dead serious.
Wow.
Wow.
I was like, wait, what?
Oh, my back hurts.
I feel like my hair was falling out at the time. Well, I have no hair, but still.
Yeah, same hair.
It's falling out. And because he was asked, I was like, he asked about Rhythm Pooh. Like, what's your last episode about? I was like, it's about Sega Saturn. And he goes, Sega Saturn, what's that? And I said, you're probably joking, but it was the second to last game console Sega made. And he goes, Sega used to make game consoles? And I looked at him waiting for the laugh. I'm like, the fuck are you on? Of course they did. That was what they were. You ever heard of the Dreamcast? No. Wow. I wanted to sob. So I sat there while doing freaking sit-ups and push-ups. I could barely freaking breathe. And I'm like, Dreamcast was a system. I'm like dying there. So I'm like, no, this will not stand. I have to talk to you now. You need to know what you missed out on, kid. It blew my mind. It makes you think, just there are grown-ass men who weren't alive when the Dreamcast came out.
Mm-hmm.
My head hurts.
Nah.
It's just not right.
God damn.
It's not right. It's not right. But you know what? Still playing them damn games. I'm still on top of it. I'll be a 70-year-old man in a whole folks home like, y'all got that Nintendo Super Sure? What? They just ran out of names. They just take two words and pull them. They put words on balls and just pop them out of a machine. Like, okay, here we go. We have the Nintendo Gumby pile. There you go. There's all the Gumby piles now. That's a good system. What did they have? Boom. They brought back blast processing. Remember that? They perfected it. That's a system seller now? It is.
Blast processing.
That is probably one of the most hilarious of all gaming buzzword concepts, because as adults we know blast processing wasn't even a damn thing. It was literally just some buzzword that came up with and say Sonic is fast. We call it blast processing. There's no processing.
There was no such thing. It wasn't a thing. They just made it up to make it sound cool.
Exactly.
It worked, though.
Yeah. They'll go, oh, man, Sonic Blast Processing is amazing. You mean screen scrolling? Because they have it. We all have it. Every game has scrolling screens. Well, maybe not Pac-Man and the original Burger Time, but maybe most original games. But you know what I'm saying? Point is, all games, pretty much every game during that era had screen scrolling. So there was nothing special about that in regards to that. And then furthermore, it became the biggest joke, which we didn't realize we were much older, is that they told us Sonic as being this ridiculously fast rodent. But then the reality of it was most of the game, you play it slowly, because if you played it fast, you just run into a freaking bed of spikes. So they designed a character whose claim to fame was how fast he was, but his speed was a detriment to the game's performance. Like, if you utilize the speed, you fuck up constantly. You can't use it. You got to freaking tiptoe the hedgehog all over the freaking stage, and it drove me freaking bananas. And then we got the later songs. It's like, but it just feels like I'm holding right. Like, well, that's kind of what you would have to do to utilize Sonic in a 2D side-scrolling scenario. Now we know what's going on here. And then the modern Sonic came over. He was behind the back. He was like, I can't even do platforming. It's behind the back. Like, what do you want Sonic to fucking do? Like, and that was the thing that always hit me the most. I'm sure there's probably like five people that like, want to lynch me right now. But, like, I love Sonic back in the day, despite the fact that I'm ragging on how speed was a detriment to the gameplay. And I love the modern Sonic games, too, though they had to work the bugs out on their controls. But you'd get people that would complain, rag about how Sonic wasn't, it's just not as good anymore. Not as good anymore. Now, I'll admit, 2D and 3D are vastly different gameplay styles. And Sonic Mania was a great game. It is a great game. So there's no denying that they finally came up with, this is what people wanted. But as I played Sonic Mania, I went back to saying, but modern Sonic is the actual Sonic as he should have been. He's a fast-ass character. Sonic's not Mario. Sonic is fast. Sonic should be blasting through obstacle courses, tearing through walls and shit. Hell, enemies should just be obstacles. You shouldn't have to fight them. Just, hey, there's a guy, dash past him or just buzzsaw through it, because you're freaking Sonic. You're fast as balls. Just roll through everything. But no, people wanted this slow-ass rodent that has obstacles or whatever. Why am I ranting about Sonic?
I have no fucking clue why you're ranting about Sonic.
It just went there. Something clicked. The rage was uncaged, I tell you. I needed it to happen. So,
oh, my Lord.
I was not, in fact, uncaged. I'm still sitting here.
Before things get any further off track, we do have one final game we have to talk about tonight. Should we get to that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it's called Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, God damn it.
Unleashed Colors.
Close. Very
Sonic
close.
Sonic has a new friend, and he has spring shoes. It's awesome. Also, Sonic hangs out with a human wearing a fursuit, and that's what all the kids want now, so whatever.
Oh, Lord.
That's how we both feel about that.
Anyway.
That was the best follow-up.
Like, yeah, it was near unison as well on the recording, so it's beautiful. But final game to talk about tonight is called Northgard, developed and published by Shiro Games. It released October 4th on Xbox One for $34.99. Northgard is a strategy game based on Norse mythology in which you control a clan of Vikings vying for the control of a mysterious newfound continent. Pernell, tell us about Northgard.
Well, Northgard is a real-time strategy game, and by default, like the base mode of the game, is a story mode they throw in there, which is kind of nice because it allows you to get your feet wet in how gameplay works. And the story mode is played off as by a character who is the son of a ruling Viking tribe. His father would be the Jarl, I suppose. I've been playing tons of Viking games, and I still haven't quite got the jargon down, but basically, I think the leader's a Jarl. And essentially, another Viking clan tears through, kills his father and his entire clan and leaves him to die. And he ends up going on a quest for revenge against his clan to kill him, which is why you're trekking across this continent. aside from that, the story doesn't matter because I didn't care about it. I'm sorry. I'm but as what it is with a lot of games like this, the story is just an excuse to get you from stage to stage. Yeah. So when a level starts off, it's typically you and a few soldiers, citizens, and a town hall. Town hall is your primary base of operations for where you're going to actually start, you know, unleashing, you know, orders and duties and whatnot. And your goal is to get your civilization up and off the ground and, in some respects, self-sustainable. Now, in the story mode, each level will occasionally give you different goals. Not occasionally, every level will give you different goals. Sometimes it might just be harvest enough food for this period of time. Sometimes it might be explore a certain amount of the map. Other times it might be defeat this clan or save this clan or trade enough items, which I'll get into what trading is in a bit. But for the most part, the game gives you goals that they want you to fulfill in order to complete the stage. And if you complete the stage and come back, it also provides you with bonus objectives that you can fulfill as well, just to kind of give you a little bit more to do with the game. Now, to finally get to how the game works. So this game has two seasons, life and death. Death is also known as winter. During the life season, you are doing everything in your power to expand your territory, which is by using a dial to progress through a set of different things you can build. For example, a woodcutter shed, which will allow you to place it down and then harvest wood in the surrounding area. Or if you find fertile land while you're out scouting the environment. That's all good. A scouting booth, which you can use to train soldiers to become scouts. Scouts are able to explore uncharted land and find new areas to check out, inhabit, colonize, and then build on. So each time you find a location and colonize it, which costs food to do for some reason, you are then able to build on that spot. Unlike a lot of RTS games where you can honestly just cluster a bunch of buildings together if you really feel like it, in this particular game, you can't do that. Instead, which I honestly think is a great idea, you are only able to build a set amount depending on the area of the landmass you find. So, for example, typically you're able to build three buildings in a location, sometimes two, sometimes more. And later on, you're able to expand and develop that area to allow you to put one or two more buildings down. But this allows you to pace out your development and exploration so you don't feel overwhelmed about stuff you need to do. Now, if you find fertile land, for example, you can build a farm, which will allow you to harvest food and store it for feeding your tribe. Same for a pond, you can build a fisherman's hut to fish and catch food to feed your tribe. And there's a bunch of military buildings as well. I could go on all day about the different kinds of buildings in the game, but essentially there's a bunch of buildings you can build. There are a lot of things you need to harvest and collect. Food, wood, ore, money, fame, happiness. Yes, you have to collect happiness. And if you run out of happiness, people stop knocking boots and they stop giving birth to grown-ass Vikings. Because how that works, I also don't know.
I never get that in sim games. How do they just birth fully grown humans? They just multiply.
Honestly, that's why I like the space ones the best. At least they fly a cloning device. Like, thank you. No. Just cover the do. As long as there's one living person there, you can clone them. But Viking game, Northgard, it's like, well, we're all happy. Let's go knock boots. Well, she just gave birth to a grown man. Is she dead? No, she's stronger than ever. She's out there chopping wood right now. How'd that happen? Whatever. It's just crazy. I mean, it makes for a great game, don't get me wrong. But when you sit there and try to break it down, you will lose your shit. Can't climb a mountain, but you can give birth to a grown-ass man. Go whatever. So earlier I mentioned that there's two seasons, life and death. So life is pretty much anything that is not winter. Winter is freaking death, because when winter comes along, most food production will screech to a halt. Like, you can still fish, but all your farms, as in real life, the farms stop churning, the food stops flowing, and if you're not smart about it, your clan will starve to death. You have means of which to try to get a bit of extra food if you need to push the limits. Like, if you discover sheep out in the wild, you can slaughter them for food. Or if you manage to find like a bunch of deer, you can build a hunter's den and you can hunt for your food. But it doesn't flow as well as actually having farms. So you have to plan in advance and be ready for the lean months being the winter. Also, if you have a military force out and about, until you get a certain number of upgrades, your military force is actually weakened in the winter as well. So they're not as strong as it used to be, which is fine if you're fighting other Vikings and for control of the land. But if you're fighting wildlife, it will mess you up because wolves don't give a shit that it's cold. All they know is they hungry and you came into their turf and they ain't having that. So there's a code switch, by the way. Cool. So this game is honestly, it's, I honestly had a lot of fun playing around with it, but there were definitely a few things that don't quite ruin the game, but I think they will be something, there will be things that some people will not like enough to ignore the game as a whole.
And what those did you have issues with?
Most importantly, well, there's two things. One, there is a tutorial of sorts nestled into the story mode, but it is not very... it's not very comprehensive. It's just the very occasional text box that would pop out and says, you need to build a scouting hut or else you won't scout. And you're like, okay, well, build my scouting hut. How do I open that up? And you'll figure it out, whatever. And it happens with a number of things. And then with the rest, you just don't fucking know. And then one day out of nowhere, your tribe's about to fail. Oh, your house is on fire. You're out of money. I didn't know I needed money to keep my freaking city running. Nothing told me that. I thought money was for building new things, not for maintaining old stuff. Nope, you need money. Yeah. You know, it's like stuff like that. Like, there's nothing that explains it. You just kind of crash into it and you discover it accidentally. Aside from that, also, the font is way too small. Like,
oh my God, the font in this game. Oh my Lord.
There's a lot of things where I just flat out just took guesses on what they were trying to tell me, or I had to get up from my damn chair because I'm old and stare at the freaking letters like, wait, what? Okay, whatever. But yeah, the font, I understand what they're going for. They probably wanted to use as much screen real estate for the actual game as possible, but they could have spared some space for letters. Some kerning or something. I don't know. Just make the letters bigger so it's easier to read what the heck you're trying to tell me and what all the different meters are telling me. When you have production running, sometimes it's going up, sometimes it's going down. And it outright shows you in real time, you know, food production is up by 12 or wood production is down by 6. But the font's so small, half the time I can't even freaking tell. I'm hoping I'm making stuff. All I can do is watch and see if the number's ticking up or down because I can't see the actual gains because it's too freaking small.
Part of me wonders, I've seen this happen on other games, part of me wonders if they didn't have access to an Xbox One X during development, because I've seen in the past where the developer only had access to a standard dev kit, and when the visuals got up-res to 4K, the text didn't increase in size with it, and that's what caused the problems. So I'm wondering if that might be part of the problem.
But would that be an issue on my end? Because you have an Xbox One X, but I have just a basic Xbox X or Xbox One.
Yeah.
And I still have the same font problem. So it's like, I mean, like, I know
it might just be really small font.
It's just dinky font. I think it's based on the fact that it was on a PC and they didn't optimize it for console use in that regard. Like, they worked on the controller, how controllers function and all that, but they didn't optimize the font for home console use. They optimized it for like smaller resolution PC monitors, you know? But, I mean, it's something they could totally fix. So it's not like it just leaves them out in the water, but I can definitely say it gave me a lot of grief when I was trying to play through the game because I'm sitting there squinting to try to read stuff when it was popping up on the screen. I'm like, whatever. Also, and it's something you have to just get used to in general, is like getting the flow of the game down, because there's something to that. Like, for example, there's a lot that can happen when your colony starts to expand. You'll have buildings out the wazoo strewn all over the place. And even though you only have to be dropping like 3 or 4 buildings per zone, you'll still be like, okay, where the hell did I leave? Where's my warrior hut at? Where's my fisherman hut? Where's my scout? Where the hell did he go? Now, admittedly, you don't have to per se know where he is unless you want to know what he's scouting at that time. But nonetheless, you want to be able to try to figure where the heck all your people are, and half the time it's hard to tell. Or I've had moments, and I wonder if you had this problem too, where the game will tell you your maximum number of people and the amount of people you have available. Let's say, for example, like 25 people that you have There's 25 people, but you have a max of 28. And to my understanding, that's saying that I have three people left that I could allocate to other actions because the other 25 were out doing stuff. So I'll go to a building and go, all right, I want to put you in here. And
no, that's how many people are in your village out of the maximum number of people that you can have.
Yeah, so so they're saying you have, so I'm still trying to gain more at that time. Yeah. Okay, 28 out of 20 means you max out. Okay, because the reason I was saying is because there were times where I was like, okay, I think I have enough people to put them somewhere else. And I go to try to put them in the building. It's like, nah, can't do it. I'm like, why can't I? I have people. I was like, can't do it. So I guess what you have to do at that point, which is what I was doing, I was going to look for other buildings and unassigning Vikings from those buildings just to throw them in these places, which I should actually note at this time. That is something I like about this game. As corny as it was, it started as a bad, but it's actually a plus, is the fact that by design, this game was intended to have you hot swap your character roles constantly. So there might be a time where you need a military force, but now you feel as though you don't. Take those casts out, turn them into merchants. Now they can make you money. These are some freaking multi-purpose, Amon got to go to work Vikings out. They can do any job you give them as long as you have the building to give them a hot spot, quick education. And you'll be doing that a lot in this game. You have fishermen. Now they're not fishermen. Now they're hunters. Oh, they're not hunting anymore. Now they're out reading lore. And what do you read lore for? A skill tree, which also exists in this game. And when you accrue lore, enough lore anyway, it's an interesting, currency for skill upgrades, but it makes sense. It's knowledge, basically. But the more lore you accrue, the more access you have to a skill tree. There's three skill trees you can expand on that allows you to do things like increase your food production or strengthen your weapons, or like I mentioned earlier, make your soldiers more viable in the winter. It's a variety of different things you can pull off, and it's actually kind of a nice little mechanic to just kind of eventually be told by the game, your lore is increased, you can get an upgrade. It's like, yes, I'm glad I was able to squint and read that, now I can get that upgrade.
See, the first time I ran into that, when I first started playing the game, I just went straight into a single player game, and that popped up, and I'm just like, how the fuck do I do anything to my lore? Like, by the time I figured it out, I had enough for like four upgrades.
Yeah, because
that's like, how much I banked up.
Yeah, because I don't think the game out. I don't remember the game outright telling you press this button to go to lore. But if you press start, there's a wealth of button mapping that it shows you, and there is a button for lore tree. Yeah. So I will give them that. But up until I was like, I'm gonna just sit here and study this damn controller map. I also was like, what the heck, lore? What are skills? Military. Yeah, and that all just getting used to, honestly, they're understanding that there's a different radial button for military management than there is for building management and all that stuff, and it takes getting used to. Yeah. But what I will say is that I do find joy in the game, and I also like the fact that there's multiple ways to win levels, apparently, too, though.
Yeah,
I was all about, since I was primarily in story mode, I just focused on what the game told me to do. But there are in the non-campaign, skirmish mode, you can win through jacking up your fame level or get a certain amount of money.
It's kind of like in a board game where there's multiple ways to win it.
And I like that because it allows you to specialize in different stuff if you want. But at the same time, you have to be careful because if you specialize in one thing, but it leaves you vulnerable to other mechanics with no way to stop the opponent, they're going to just steamroll you with their win mechanic. Yeah. And then they also have the different clans, and each clan has its own specialty as well. So you might have a clan that is just super happy all the time, so they're just going to be borking like wolves. And you might have the other clan where their whole thing is they're very financially savvy, so their tradesmen will actually give you like a 30% bonus on all of their earnings. So you'll be like, okay, well, this is clearly the money-making clan. Let's just throw these guys out there and just make a bunch of trade shops. Some might be good at harvesting. It's just, I like this game. As a guy who comes in from board game world, this definitely feels like a cool RTS board game.
Yeah, I figured this would be up your alley, and Cole, I figured this would be up your alley as well.
Yeah, from what I've seen of it, I kind of regret not taking it. Everything had marketed it as an RTS, and so I was thinking of it in strategy terms of like Halo Wars,
Yeah, there's a lot more focus on the development than in the combat in this. They're definitely, the combat is there, but its development comes first.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I can tell you, like, I'm in that boat, too, where, like, I typically, it's not that I hate RTS, it's that I am just, I am notoriously bad at RTS, so I damn near ignore them. Like, back in the day, a friend, my old college roommate taught me how to play Command & Conquer and StarCraft, and the way he taught me about Command & Conquer was by sending a guy into my base to steal all my money and say, by the way, check this out, you can steal your opponent's money. See, I just did it to you. I'm like, well, this sounds freaking fun. I'm fucking broke. How's that going to get me to enjoy your game? And then with StarCraft, we were playing back and forth over the internet one day, just having fun. And at one point, I was like, oh, crap, I got to go. I got to run an errand for my mom. And my friend goes, okay, well, before you go, I'm going to show you something. And he just sent this horrible wave of enemies and just to trash my base. And I'm like, why did you do that? He's like, I just wanted to show you how fast people can, that are good at the game, can build and destroy your stuff. Like, that's not encouraging for a first game. It's like, yeah. This is how good you have to become to enjoy this shit.
This is how to piss off a new player.
Exactly. So I was like, well, and between those two, I mean, I became that guy. I was like, you know, if it's an RTS mini game, fine. If it was an RTS, that is the game, prepare to suck, because that's where I'm going to roll. So I was honestly kind of expecting that with this, but I like the fact that the whole thing with the seasonal life to death scenario, I just keep calling it that because there really is just two seasons in the game. Mm-hmm. But by having that set up in the game, in addition to the whole limited, you know, growth period of, like, you know, a certain number of buildings in each zone, it kind of forces you to develop slower than what an RTS would allow you to do. So it allows you to be more methodical. You know, some players might be like, oh, I need to be able to just do everything right now, right now, right now. But that's not what this game is. This game is about, you know, building yourself up, getting your people situated and in order. They need to have food. They need to have joy. They need to have a place to piss. They need all these things to feel like they can live in this environment. And then if a hoarding Viking group comes in, send a small army after them, whatever.
You know what else we need?
What?
We need a verdict. $35 on this one. What do you think of it?
I think it's a total buy, man. It's a great game. I think it's a genuinely good game.
I personally give it a recommended try. It's definitely not going to be for everybody. If you're not a fan of town building or sim building management, stuff like that, this game's not going to click with you. It didn't really click with me at first, but the more I'm playing it, the more I'm really enjoying it. I just worry $35 might be a bit pricey for this one. That's my big concern.
I feel like what they might need for that to really hammer it home is maybe some free DLC down the line to have a more involved campaign. Like, so the primary campaign, you are utilizing one of the clans that gets one type of bonus, whereas, like, if there was multiple clans that played off different bonuses and the story mode was based on utilizing their bonuses to their fullest, it might make more sense to say, okay, you've got multiple stories to play, but once you knock out those story missions, your game, which isn't extremely long, mind you, you'll be going back to, like, okay, here is a skirmish mode, which, while it's fun, you're just playing around with it. It's just like playing Monopoly, where you're just like, okay, just throw the board out. I ran on the board for 3 hours. That was fun. Game over. You're like, no, I want progression. I want to feel like I'm doing more. Even StarCraft had, like, the freaking Terran and the Zerg, you know, different campaigns. You know, maybe an additional campaign might be a nice little bump, but I still feel like as long as the person knows what they're getting coming in from the gameplay perspective and with just what it, how it works and how it plays, it's a quality title.
Good stuff. Cole, any questions?
No, I'm just mad that I passed it up now. I might have to sell my husband on Craigslist so I can get it.
Again.
Well,
yeah.
It's okay. Just make sure he escapes like last time, and that way he'll get back home.
We'll go rescue him after a couple months. It'll be fine. A
couple months.
He ain't going to want to leave. He's going to get Stockholm.
Yeah, but at least I don't have to have him criticizing me for reinstalling the games that I uninstalled because I was playing them too much.
True.
Yeah, now you're just reinstalling a husband because you deleted him to get a game, and now you're reinstalling him into your household.
It's easier than reinstalling a game.
Touche.
Oh man, on that note, Pernell, thanks as always for coming on, chatting about chatting about the games with us. Thanks again to Dark Mika for coming on and chatting with us. That is it for this episode. It's been a long one. We're going to have a couple of long ones coming up. There's a lot of fucking games coming out.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the holiday season, folks. It's going to be a ride.
Really is. It definitely is going to be a ride, and hopefully everyone enjoys the ride with us. Pernell, do you have any final words to end the show?
I want to sleep and reinstall my energy sensors so I can get... I'm tired.